So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review me. The Mega Power Explode here at WrestleMania 5.
Welcome to Review Away. It is John Pollock and Wei Ting coming at you this week. Wei Ting, we have two more days till we leave for WrestleMania weekend. And boy, I'm exhausted already, and the weekend hasn't even begun.
No, it's been a long day.
Yeah. Well, I would say Monday was a bit crazier than today. And thankfully, I had Tuesday to relax before we get back into the craziness that is WrestleMania week. But quite ambitious, just all the stuff that's happening and trying to cover as much as you can and doing interviews and on top of regular stuff.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of UFC news, of course, and also just a lot of our day-to-day operations. But today, yeah, it's going to be nuts. I anticipate it to be even worse when we're actually down there in New Jersey.
On Monday, you were very busy, as was I.
Yep.
How did you feel knowing that at the end of all your work, you were doing constant shooting all day, that you still had to go back and watch an hour of WrestleMania 5 and have that in the back of your head?
Yeah.
Because I'll be honest, when you walked into the voiceover booth at around 4:10 p.m. on Monday, I thought you might kill me. Like, how dare you make me have to watch WrestleMania 5?
Why would I mean, I would never blame you. Why would I blame you? This is part of my commitment.
I subtly believe it's always building up in one day.
No, but I'm not angry at you.
Fuck wrestling. Fuck you, Pollock.
No, it's not that at all. I think it's, I have weeks where I welcome the extra stuff because, I have time for it. And weeks where it gets to be a bit much. But
you just say your mantra is feed me more.
No.
Feed me enough till I'm fine.
No. But today we had a lot of work to do, and so I still had to watch a few hours of this show. And
be honest, when you said let's do WrestleMania 5, you didn't realize this was a 3.5 hour WrestleMania. Neither did I. By the way,
I didn't know. Was that
I thought WrestleMania 4 was lying. I was like, okay, WrestleMania 5, we're back to 2 hours and 45 minutes was that I had in my head, and then all of a sudden, we're not even at the Intercontinental Title match at the 3 hour mark. It's like, how long are these guys going?
14 matches on this show.
You had to fit in Ronnie Garvin and Dino Bravo.
Oh my God! Holy shit! A lot.
Like everyone got on this show. 28. No, way more than that. 14 matches, but a lot of them were tag matches.
Jesus,
and
there's so much filler on the show. We had the Piper's Pit, and then the No Holds Barred a trailer. Just so much.
That's one of the things that not enough people I think realize is that yes, WrestleMania was like a big show and stuff, but it was like, it's not what it is today. You know what I mean? Like, for a lot of them, it was a big show, but it was just another show. You know what I mean? It wasn't like it was, we see 3-minute matches here. It's like these guys are just, for some of them, just going through the motions here. This isn't the big show of the year or anything. It's like, we're in an arena. There's a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I could see that. I mean, it must be different, though, for a WrestleMania 3 or you're in front of so many people.
Sure.
A regular show. But this was just back again at the Trump Plaza in New Jersey.
Yeah, they returned once again.
Yeah, what's the story behind that? Why 2 years in a row?
Because Donald Trump said, we'd like to have WrestleMania back here again. And Vince said, okay, well, why? And Donald Trump wrote down a figure that read $1.8 million, and Vince said, okay, sure.
Wow.
So fee for WrestleMania. That'll do it. I don't know if he got that fee for both years. Definitely for 5. Maybe 4 as well, and that's how he was able to bring it there.
Now, are there any other – I mean, when cities bring in WrestleMania, do they pay the WWE, or is this
– A lot of them now, depending on where they go, a lot of them will give a lot of tax breaks to the WWE to come because of what they're bringing. I mean, you're looking at over $100 million in Miami last year to the local economy, and it's much more than just the event. It's all of the surrounding events. I mean, it's a – it's a real big cultural event now. When you can land WrestleMania, I mean, that is a big boom to your local economy.
But are these some of the only instances where they were actually paid to bring the show in?
At this point in time, yeah. Okay. I mean, it wasn't like other places were paying to bring it here. Now it's at a point where there is actual bidding going on for WrestleMania. Like, right. It is actually of that stature, which is pretty incredible. Like, just from, you know, you look at growing up where WrestleMania, especially during those down years, where WrestleMania did feel like kind of just another pay-per-view some years, and now it's exploded.
How financially and, you know, popularity-wise, how was the WWE doing prior to this event?
This was a real huge period because this Hulk Hogan Randy Savage program was, you could argue, the most successful program in WWF history. And we really dropped the ball by not reviewing the 1989 edition of the main event, which really set up Hogan and Savage, because it features one of the all time greatest fuck ups in that. They have Savage and Hogan tagging together. And then during the match, Elizabeth is knocked off the apron. And Hogan takes her to the back, and it had been brewing with Hogan and Savage, but they were the mega powers. And Hogan carries her to the back, takes her to the doctor, and then they go to commercial. And they come back, and 21 million people are watching this as Hulk Hogan is just standing there waiting for them to cue him. But they're live on NBC.
Oh, no.
And he's heard saying, like, let me know what the tizime is.
Tizime.
Yeah, just speaking carny here for the NBC producers. So give me my tizime cue.
Wow.
So then he realizes he's live, and he goes into this crazy acting where he's just like crying, like, don't let her die. It's ridiculous. But, you know, that part isn't remembered. What is remembered is Hogan goes back to the ring. Savage thinks that Hogan had walked out on him, so Savage cheap shots him. They have this big brawl in the back where Savage is like threatens to hit Elizabeth, and it exploded. And as I mentioned, 21 million people watched that, and it led to this pay-per-view where it was huge. This was the most purchased pay-per-view in their history up until this point. This thing did. There were 11 million homes with pay-per-view in 1989. Mm-hmm. 760,000 bought this show.
Wow.
Like, that's incredible.
That's pretty
today
good.
That number is through the roof. And WrestleMania this year probably – remember, this didn't even include international. They didn't have international markets at that time. So that's just domestic numbers. I mean, this year's WrestleMania won't do that number. And it's in way more homes at this point.
That's quite amazing.
So this was a huge, huge successful event for them. I did some numbers research here. The good old Wrestling Observer Newsletter. $1.6 million gate. They had a higher gate for this than WrestleMania 3 because they jack prices up.
Right.
Plus
the
site fee you throw in there. Mm-hmm. Very successful event.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow.
King Haku probably got a decent payoff. So that was the setup for WrestleMania 5, and I guess we will dive right into things.
Let's do it.
Sunday, April the 2nd of 1989, Atlantic City, New Jersey, once again. And just like last year, Way, the NWA ran a live television show head-to-head with them.
Really?
Another gigantic botch in their history was it was after the 1988 show where basically the cable companies were like, all right, you two, you guys are not doing this again. You are not going head-to-head with one another. But then come January of 1989 – Vince McMahon was not happy with the cut that the pay-per-view provider was giving them, where they would split the money. And he said, I want a higher cut, or you guys can go fuck yourself. So the pay-per-view companies are like, this guy's going to tell us we have to pay him more? Fuck that. And they told the NWA, they're like, can you guys put a show together on that day? We're going to hit them where it hurts. And then an agreement was reached between the WWF and the cable companies, but you still had this show head-to-head with WrestleMania from the Superdome, which is where WrestleMania will be next year, featuring Ric Flair and Ricky Steamboat, which they promoted just about as badly as TNA is promoting their pay-per-view coming up this Friday night.
They
mentioned it on one television show before the actual event with Flair and Steamboat.
So it didn't do that well.
It didn't do a great rating. I think it was like a 4.0 and didn't take a hit out of WrestleMania. WrestleMania did very, very well. So there. Now, do you feel like you're right in the midst of April the 2nd of 1989?
I feel like I'm back in 1989, absolutely.
You didn't watch this show at the time, did you?
No, I was probably in Hong Kong at this time.
Probably didn't have pay-per-view in Hong Kong.
I don't even know if the WWE was even a thing there.
Nope.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Do you remember Hong Kong?
I do. Yeah, bits and pieces. I mean,
I was born there. How long were you there for?
Till I was 5.
And you can remember that. I can't remember anything from...
Yeah. I mean, I
think like 8 years old is when I started remembering stuff.
Really?
Yeah, is that
that's
weird?
That's pretty late. I'd say that's pretty late. Although I'm sure, like, you know, your memories start to... You lose more and more of it as you progress. But, I mean, yeah, I remember certain things, of course. Like the buildings and, like, you know, people.
Give me your first memory. Your earliest memory of life.
Oh, my. Wow. You're getting pretty personal here. I don't even know what that could be. Let me think about that.
Just the furthest back you can go.
Fuck. I don't know. Maybe going to, like, a toy store as a little kid. Maybe, like, my uncle buying me a mask. Toy?
Yeah.
You know, Mask? I was talking to you.
Yes,
about
yes. You're a big fan.
It was the motorcycle that turned into the helicopter.
Oh.
Yeah.
I remember getting Nintendo when I was like 4 or 5.
No, so you do remember.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, maybe I do have a slight memory. When did Nintendo come out?
You probably would have been at that age.
Yeah,
like
Nintendo would have been... Yeah, 88? Is that around one?
I don't know, 88, 89.
That would be my first memory is when I got Nintendo.
Whoa. Well, yeah. Those are landmark moments. So, you know, all these people who say video games.
It's Nintendo, and then it's the rockers breaking up on the barbershop.
Whoa.
Those are my earliest memories of life.
Oh, look at where it's gotten you today.
Clearly.
Yeah.
If it wasn't video games, wrestling.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Well, yeah, there you go. So for all the parents who say, hey, I'm never going to buy video games for my children, what can that amount to? Well, clearly it's...
There isn't a whole lot of, like, key stuff to remember from, like, the ages of 1 through, like, 6, really. Like, what are you going to remember that's really of value later in life?
What's of value at any point?
I mean, there's moments, life lessons, and, you know, things that later you will maybe rely upon for, you know, your life's road. But those early years aren't really that important.
You probably learned to count. You probably learned to read at that point.
Have I ever told you my theory about why sleep is... not efficient?
Oh, no, you have not. Let's hear it.
Like, when you die away, let's hope it's decades from now. Say you live to be 100.
Okay.
When you die, would you really want to know how many hours you've slept away of your life? I certainly don't want to do that, because how depressing is that going to be?
But the argument is that the more you sleep... the healthier you are, therefore you may live longer.
Of course. Of course, it's something you need to do. It's something I don't want to have to do. Oh. Think of how much... Like, I basically could have achieved a lifetime's worth, essentially. I've slept like half my life away. Had I been able to, you know, just hit a button and stay awake all this time, how much more developed would I be? How much more advanced would I be?
You can't do that. That's just not biological.
I wish I could just sleep like for an hour and that recharges me.
Sure. Well,
but 8-9 hours? That's insane.
Well, I wish I could.
What a waste of time.
I wish I could just create money out of thin air. I can't do that. I wish a lot of things. You're wishing for something that is not possible.
You say that. You honestly believe that by the end of our lifetime that people might not be able to find a way around sleep?
Yeah.
I think it's possible that they could find something.
There's no way you can... I mean, if there is, there are probably some terrible side effects to it.
There's side effects to everything. If you sleep too much, I'm sure there's side effects.
Oh, yeah. No, but I don't think... I mean, it's just a human thing. It's just a human...
I'm just saying. I think older people probably appreciate this conversation, because I know a lot of older folks listen to this podcast. They think towards the end, when time is really important to them...
Do you think...
We take time for granted right now, but when you're 88...
Do you think the same thing about pissing and shitting? What if we didn't have to
That's
piss
a momentary
and shit?
Action.
No.
What if that took you 8 hours to do every time? You'd rethink
hours.
Every drink you
Depending
have.
Depending on what you eat, it could take quite a while.
It's not going to take me 8 hours, and it's not going to be half of my lifetime.
If you add up all that time that you're spending doing that, we'd probably be saving a lot of time. You'd probably feel depressed about that too. Do you think nature should find a way to eliminate those processes? How about the process of eating?
Again, something that's done in a timely manner. I'm not saying get rid of sleep, but why so much of it? You have never in your life sat down for 8 hours and ate.
I was a pretty slow eater. Not
you're very slow.
Not 8 hours, but I mean, it gets up there. Yeah, but 8 hours, I mean, I don't know. It's just some people enjoy sleeping. Some people have great dreams, like lucid dreaming.
I never dream, ever.
Okay.
I don't have dreams.
That's why you work here?
Oh, I didn't mean it like that. Oh. By the way, a stat I read actually the other day. Do you know the average amount of toilet paper someone uses when they go to the washroom? 9 feet. That's the average. That means there's people.
Let me think about that.
9 fucking feet, dude.
That's a lot.
The giant Gonzalez and, like, Hornswoggle on top of him.
That's efficient. That's inefficient.
That's very inefficient.
Yeah. I think, I don't know.
It's padding, I think people want.
Yeah. Just, you know, like a nice wad, basically. You don't want it to tear.
You know? But some people go a little over.
Yeah, yeah. Well, nobody wants to get it all over their hands, their fingers, right?
No, but the 9 feet?
That's
9 feet of toilet paper.
Well, you know what? Like, once you're rolling it into your
hand.
Are
you putting out there that could fucking
thing is,
steam through 8 feet?
Once you're rolling it onto your hand, you don't realize exactly how much length there is in the paper. I don't know. What's the solution? Thicker paper? You're still spending more, wasting more trees. What's the solution here?
Well, you could just get
bidets.
Bidets? Why haven't those made their way over here?
Oh, man. You should go to
I've
Japan.
Never heard one person that's come back from Japan not just rave about bidets.
The toilets in Japan are just amazing. Like, they have...
Describe for those that have never been to Japan.
Well, you go to Japan. I mean, it's not in all places. I know, like, some places in Japan might still have the holes inside, like, where you just, like, crouch over a hole and you go in that.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, I think most modern places have, like, the Japanese toilets. And I'm sure WH and Chris Charlton, you'll hear way more about this on
they should.
Japanese
I'm sending – this is my verbal question for their monthly podcast is tell us the benefits of bidets. And maybe if there's any disadvantages to having a bidet.
Sure. But anyway
– does a bidet – because it'll like, rinse and stuff. Do you need toilet paper still?
I don't know how thorough.
They're not that good, are they?
Well, I don't know, actually. I don't know, maybe.
You never used one?
I have used one. I don't remember whether or not. I probably still use, like, paper.
Fuck, you know what? I just interviewed Carl Anderson. It's up on the website. I now am kicking myself for not asking him.
I would have loved to have known Carl Anderson's toilet habits. Anyway.
Well, you know what? He said on Friday to come say hi at the Ring of Honor show. So you and we're going to do an off-camera interview, and we're going to ask Carl Anderson about bidets.
Excellent.
And report back.
So anyway, these are the toilets where basically like a little water gun, like a retractable water gun, comes up from the inside of the toilet.
Yep.
And it just basically shoots water into your ass. And you can control the temperature in most of them. It's just amazing.
Yeah,
it's just amazing. And,
do you control the water?
You can control the pressure too. I think it depends on the thing, but like, it's the greatest feeling in the world. And there's like a you know button for like the lady part, and then the asshole.
Fuck off, so, really?
Yeah. So so it's great, and like you know, afterward you don't have to use your hands for anything. You know, you should still wash your hands, of course.
But, yeah, that's preferable.
You know, it's just I don't know why they haven't made their way over here. I'd assume it's just the price.
So how horrible was that first time when you came back here and had to use one of these fucking toilets?
Definitely.
I'd be annoyed.
It was like one of those things I knew, you know, it was a fleeting thing. So I learned to enjoy it while I had it. And once I didn't have it, you know, it was just back to normal. WrestleMania.
In Canada.
I'm sure you can buy one. It's just probably very expensive. You'd have to import one from somewhere.
They're so extinct in Canada that when I write bidets in Canada, did you mean beds in Canada? Beads? Bears in Canada or beaches in Canada? No, I mean bidets.
Because you spelled bidet, you butchered the spelling.
How do you spell it? B-E-D?
You spelled it B-E-D-A-I. It's B-I-D-E-T. It's French.
Oh.
I think. I don't know.
Okay. B-I-D-A-A-I. I promise we're going to get to WrestleMania.
B-I-D-A-A-I?
B-I-D-A-A-I, right?
No, B-I-D-E-T. Where did you get B-I-D-A-A-I?
Where the fuck does a T come from in bidet?
It's French.
So you'd still pronounce the T in French. T is never silent.
Yeah, it is.
I guess that, yeah, T can be silent. Fuck this. All right. There's no bidets in Canada. There's no D in there at all.
What?
Is there a D?
Yeah.
But no T. There is a T.
B-I-D-E-T, man. I've said it like three times here. I've already, look. I've punched it up in my phone.
Bidet.
Whatever, man.
All right. It's time to talk about WrestleMania. Did you like this show?
Man, there's a lot of filler. I won't lie, man. This was, for the most part, pretty tough for me to get through. But then again, I also started this way too late. I started this last night. And so that really affected it. But that main event was awesome. Really liked the main event. You're still looking up bidets?
It had a link at Home Depot, but I don't think they have them at Home Depot.
Well, yeah, just, you know, think about it.
Well, there were 14 matches. It was a long show.
Yeah, it was.
A very long show. This was voted the worst major show of 1989 by the Wrestling Observer Newsletter.
Is that right?
Do you feel this was one of the worst shows you've ever watched? I wouldn't categorize.
No.
Another one, though, propped up by nostalgia, but I agree. Very good main event.
Yeah, I wouldn't say the worst show, but then
and
again,
a great build-up.
Then again, I haven't seen all the shows from 1989 either, so I can't really say. It might have been the worst amongst a really good crop.
Your second week in a row. What were your thoughts on Gorilla Monsoon and Jesse Ventura?
I really liked them on this show.
I didn't
find them annoying at all.
Like, neither do I.
In fact, I found that they helped a lot of matches. Jesse, in particular, I just think he just makes such a great case for making excuses for the heels to the point where, I mean, I think if you're a kid, you would just hate it. But if you're an adult, you just love it because here's a guy who's just fucking around and like thinking of the most ridiculous excuses.
I was the opposite, actually. When I was younger, I got so frustrated with Gorilla Monsoon, who was just such a just would let the baby faces get away with murder and never had any really. Jesse Ventura to me made all these logical arguments, and Gorilla was like, "Oh, Jesse, come on!" And Ventura would show his hypocrisy throughout a broadcast. Well, you didn't say this earlier, Gorilla. That's all for the title. This is disgusting. And Gorilla would have nothing to come back with.
Yeah, that is.
I always loved Jesse here because I was like, this guy is making solid points, and this goof next to him is just he won't stand for anything.
Yeah, that's very true. Like, he definitely, I noticed some parts on this show where Gorilla was just without logic, being too apologetic for the baby faces. You know, there are moments where
come on, Jesse.
Yeah, come on. Come on,
he's hitting him with a foreign object.
Like, there's a moment sometimes where, like, Jesse actually brings up a valid point. Like, Strikeforce haven't teamed for a while, and so Jesse was questioning what their chemistry is going to be like. And Gorilla's like, okay, but realistically, Jesse, you know, you're in Hollywood. I got, you know, we all got our own things on the side. How much do we really know about these people, what they're doing on their downtime? Come on. Like, well, what type
beautiful of setup for the angle at the end of the show, too, by your babyface announcer. Oh,
exactly.
Just...
But, like, what type of unbiased journalist would ever say something like that?
I know a lot of people love Gorilla Monsoon. He was not that well loved by people. I mean, I think if he had come around today, I mean, it'd be very different. It's so funny when you inject nostalgia into things, how that really not even is like something in the back of people's head, but will dominate people's memories when it comes to things of their childhood. So yeah. I can't wait to be an old man and watch how.
Michael Cole.
Remember that awesome build for WrestleMania 29? Oh, man. They never do rematches anymore.
Yeah. Oh, it's going to happen, I think. Although
there's kids that'll like they will fucking romanticize so much.
Although we're almost like 20 years removed from like the mid 90s in WWE and how many people romanticize that era, like the down period.
Not so much a down period, but we see that with the Monday Night Wars. It's just
those are actually,
everything was great. But everything was not great. Come on.
But those are actually like periods where you can consider that the product was actually really good. But I'm talking about like bad wrestling of that time. Would that ever be considered good today?
I see your point. It wasn't as much a popular point. I think certain characters, even from that era, are greatly remembered.
I personally enjoy those shows just because I grew up with them. So, but would I consider them good wrestling or good matches? Maybe not.
I hear some times from people, it's just like, how dare you talk negatively about this pivotal event in my childhood? It's like, what the fuck does it matter what I say about it? You enjoy the show.
Yeah.
Enjoy it.
Oh, no, we have a lot of power.
We have no power.
We have a lot
what
of influence over people's opinions.
Well, the show started off with a great opening. Anytime that you can put images of Hulk Hogan, Randy Savage to the tune of a saxophone.
Sure.
Great.
Oh, the saxophone was the biggest instrument of the 80s. My brother used to play the saxophone, and he would just get asked to play in a bunch of bands because every band at the time wanted to play Careless Whisper by George Michael.
Oh.
And he fucking hates that song now just because, like, every time he's had to play that song so many times. You know that song?
I think I'd know it if I heard it.
Anyway, I'll
look it up.
Okay.
Okay, we'll play it at the end. There.
Well, basically, that's the 80s for you.
I almost sneezed.
Yeah.
But I didn't. So a good opening here. A nice image of the mega powers literally exploding.
Yeah.
They're
the explosion sort of.
They just can't control, their bodies cannot contain the hatred each has for the other. Gorilla Monsoon and Jesse Ventura introduce us, and Monsoon tells us to get ready for the most exciting 7 hours of professional wrestling. What does he think this is, 2013?
Did he say 7 hours?
I think so.
Hmm.
Unless I heard it wrong. Okay. Then, you know, every year, Way, they bring in someone of note to sing America the Beautiful. And you know
Ray
what?
Charles, Aretha Franklin, Willie Nelson. Some greats.
Some years, they get to the arena and during the afternoon realize, oh shit, we don't have anyone to sing America the Beautiful. What's Rockin' Robin up to? Female WWF wrestler. And she came to sing America the Beautiful.
Something, Gorilla. She better keep her daytime job, is all I gotta say.
Do you think you could do any better, Jesse?
She better stick to wrestling.
Give me a break.
I don't want to be rude, Way, but I would have to say this was probably the worst rendition in WrestleMania history.
Oh, this fucking sucked.
Like, this was like, I wouldn't even call this singing, as saying something in a stern warning.
Sure.
Oh, beautiful, four spacious skies.
We forget, though, like the DX band did it 1 year. I forgot how that was.
It was horrendously bad. Yeah, that one was bad.
Couldn't have been that great. But this was...
I would still put the DX band ahead of Rockin' Robin.
Okay. Definitely an odd choice. Like, when they announced, hey, Rockin' Robin to sing America the Beautiful, I thought, was there some, like, 80s musician also named Rockin' Robin that I didn't know
You're thinking
about?
Of the song... No. Rockin' Robin.
No, not just that, but like I'm thinking, like, is this woman some type of 80s pop star? But no, this is the wrestler, Rockin' Robin. And Jesse afterwards just basically makes fun of her.
Jesse totally buried her after this. Ventura telling her that was terrible. Yeah. And it seemed like they cut this short. She only sang for like a minute or so. Definitely not as long as Gladys Knight performed the
year prior.
Gladys
Knight did like a mashup. She did like, you know, a bunch of songs.
We actually got, I thought, great musical performance later in the show.
Huh?
Run DMC was on.
Oh, yeah, yeah, right, yes.
The WrestleMania rap.
They should have done the America the Beautiful.
I was shocked that they got Run DMC in 1989. I mean, this was in terms of the WWF, I mean, I won't necessarily accuse them of always finding the most current musical guests that really speak to a certain audience.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like they're usually really behind the curve. I don't know how this came about with Run DMC, but they got them.
So, I mean, they're from New Jersey, so yep. Might be why.
Because they were local?
Part of the reason.
Maybe.
Yeah.
So from there, we got our first matchup of 14.
Oh, wait. Maybe they're not from New Jersey.
Hollis, Queens.
Yeah, I guess that's not
technically New York.
Yeah.
It's all the same, right?
No,
even whatever. The WrestleMania banner this year says New York / New Jersey. It's one state.
It's the same thing.
King Haku, accompanied by Bobby Heenan. Did you do a shot every time you saw Bobby Heenan on this broadcast?
No, I didn't. I was driving today.
He was officiating, managing a lot of guys on this show. Taking on Hercules.
It came out to Jerry Lawler's theme.
Yes, I noted that here. Lawler's future theme. I guess that was just their production music for King Wrestler theme. Yeah. Haku?
They did the same thing when they were going to announce the... Remember on Raw like 2 weeks ago where Triple H came on?
Yeah.
And somebody must have looked for the King of Kings song at iTunes, and instead the Lawler song came on.
That's probably what they did.
Yeah.
Haku is brought out on like this riser with these people carrying him to the ring, which I always enjoyed about the King gimmick, mm-hmm. where the King gimmick also accompanied by slaves.
Yes.
To carry him to the ring, to and from.
Yeah, slaves.
So unnecessary is that. I must be risen on this and carried to the ring.
Yep.
Anyway, they don't do that anymore. They need a king character.
Well, slavery has been abolished, I guess.
Heenan gets on the mic and wants the people to get up and bow to Haku as they boo. And then Hercules enters and clears the ring by swinging his chain.
That'll do it. Chain swing.
I never understood this Hercules character, where it was like, am I to believe that he's the actual Hercules?
I don't know. What did they say? What did they say he was?
Him Hercules.
He's just a big guy.
How could they even call him Hercules? That'd be like introducing a wrestler as Superman. Aren't there certain copyrights? Like Hercules is a character.
Yeah, but I mean, like you hear Hercules, like outside of that. Right? Outside of that character, don't you?
From, like, Greek mythology, right?
Right.
So maybe it's just fair game that you can go after him. It's not like DC or Marvel owns
Marvel
Hercules.
Marvel, there's a Marvel character named Hercules.
Was it out in 1989?
Yeah, probably before that.
Well, then I don't understand this at all.
Yeah, I don't know.
Hercules Hernandez. Haku attacks him from behind to start the match.
He's a Mexican Hercules.
Yeah. Hercules quickly gets the advantage after a series of scoop slams. Haku attacks him on the floor. Then Hercules, they explain, left Bobby Heenan because Hercules felt like a slave, they explain. There's a bear hug by Hercules, the first of many, many bear hugs on this show. Hercules comes off the top, gets kicked by Haku. Then Haku misses a splash, and Hercules goes for a back suplex, but doesn't really bridge his shoulders up at all. It looks like a double pin here, but they rule Hercules wins 6 minutes, 53 seconds.
Welcome
to WrestleMania 4.
Yeah,
5.
That's right. And I think Hercules making him run for the Scott Putski Award this year after losing out to, who did we say? Who did the people say for WrestleMania 4?
Don Morocco was
Morocco
the victor last week. You're just barely squeezing out Hercules.
Well, considering the participants here, I didn't think this was the worst match ever. I thought it was an odd choice for an opener, you know, to have just a power match.
Well, they wanted to start it off with royalty.
They wanted to start it off with a slow, methodical bear hug.
They needed a linear version of the King gimmick. Like, if King Haku loses, it should be King Hercules.
Sure.
I never understood that as a kid. I felt like this was like a title, where if you lose it, you're no longer a king.
Well, maybe he was born into it.
No, he won a tournament for it.
You're right.
Gene Okerlund is in the back. He had a busy day of talking to everybody with the Rockers. And Michael says that today's match is going to be, they're going to try and catch Grease Lightning. And Jannetty says they're going to rock and roll, strut and stroll, and slam and jam. It's a lot of things to do in one match that was only going to go 8 minutes.
Yeah.
They did a bit of rocking, little strutting. And they didn't do any jamming that I could see. This was Shawn Michaels' first WrestleMania match.
Right.
Trivia note.
Yeah, Mr. WrestleMania here. A very young Shawn Michaels cutting a pretty generic babyface promo.
Yes.
Say.
Taking on Big Boss Man and Akeem with Slick, better known as the Twin Towers.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the first of 18 WrestleManias for Shawn Michaels. The Rockers worked on the left arm of Akeem, who was on the show last year as the One Man Gang. Which gimmick did you prefer?
Akeem, by far. I thought this was hilarious.
Just because but, how he'd hold his arm?
Just the idea that they got this big white guy to play a black man, I think it's hilarious. I actually missed out on all that. Like, what exactly, how did they explain that?
It was like literally
what happened?
He just woke up one day, and it was like these crazy vignettes. I wonder if they have them. WWF Akeem debut. Because I've actually never seen it. I've only heard of it.
It's so bizarre. Like, and like kind of racist, but not really, because it's just so so bizarre and hilarious.
Let's see here. I don't know if this is the vignette, though. See how they explain it.
I like that. What do they call that, McMahon? I don't know. The cat-like looking thing on a team is... He's not the gang anymore. He's a king. A slickster with Akeem. We had an occasion before the matchup this week to speak with Akeem.
Okay, here we go. An explanation. What a great gimmick.
So what did he like convert to Islam or something? Was that what that was?
Sure. I wish they had the vignettes. I'm sure Dan Lavransky could shed some light on the actual vignettes because it was apparently really, really hokey the way they did
awesome.
It.
But I think it's crazy. It's an amazing idea. They should do that today. Well, they kind of do.
Yeah, that's how they should have repackaged Brodus Clay. Because he just wakes up one day and suddenly he's this dancing dinosaur.
Right, sure.
Or Tensai.
Yeah.
From Japan to whatever he is now, Sweet Tea.
Yep.
Carl Anderson noted in our interview, he said, I'm going to hope to catch up with my good pal Tensai and go out dancing Saturday night. So we got the Rockers against the Twin Towers. Rockers worked on the left arm of Akeem early on. Akeem went for a splash in the corner and missed Michaels. Then the Twin Towers splashed Jannetty and got the heat, worked over him. Bossman went for an avalanche in the corner, and then Bossman just held him. Akeem just killed Michaels at one point with this clothesline, and then Bossman missed the splash off the top. Jannetty then crouches down as Bossman falls over with Michaels on his shoulders. Michaels goes for a senton off the top, and then Bossman turns it in midair into a spinning powerbomb, and then Akeem finishes Michaels with the splash. 8 minutes and 5 seconds, and there you go. Mr. WrestleMania losing in his WrestleMania debut to an Akeem splash.
Right. Air Africa. Air Africa, yeah. This was pretty much a classic Giants versus High Flyers match. And I found the Rockers extremely entertaining with their double team maneuvers. And even more entertaining was Jesse complaining how all this was illegal, all these double team moves.
He was always able to keep track of the legal man.
Well, he was, yeah. That's his job.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Then in the back, Tony Schiavone with Ted DiBiase and Virgil. And... mentions that Ted DiBiase does, that men like Donald Trump and Henry Kravitz are in the crowd, people like him, and says Beefcake will not get his hands on his hair as Virgil holds the money up, and then they cut to DiBiase at ringside shaking hands with Donald Trump at ringside. What do you think of Tony Schiavone's brief 1-year run here in the WWF?
He played a generic announcer like anybody could. I don't know. He was clearly ineffective.
Didn't last much longer. He was there a year, then went back to WCW.
Where was Donald actually sitting this year?
He was in the front row.
He was in the front row?
He was there.
I couldn't see.
Sat through the whole show once again, 2 years in a row for him.
Wow, okay, good for him.
Ted DiBiase, accompanied by Virgil, taking on Brutus Beefcake. Are we putting Brutus Beefcake amongst the nominations?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I don't know.
I don't know if he was at WrestleMania 4 peak performance levels, but he was still Brutus Beefcake here.
Well, I certainly think, I mean, to me, Hercules hasn't beat already, but sure, you can nominate him.
So Hercules is the standard then?
For me so far.
Okay.
Yeah.
Beefcake sends DiBiase to the floor early on. DiBiase got the heat, hit a back elbow, dropped a fist onto Beefcake. Never have I seen quite the disparity here of just one guy doing all the work and the other just... they're along for the ride, and I don't think I have to differentiate who played who here. There's a small package by Beefcake for a two count, and Monsoon says that he thought the match would be over by now. Match continues, though. We got a double clothesline spot. Beefcake rams DiBiase's head into the turnbuckle repeatedly, calls for the sleeper, but applies it to DiBiase when Virgil gets on the apron, so he breaks the sleeper hold. DiBiase hits him from behind, sends Beefcake to the floor where Virgil attacks Beefcake, and then after being hit from behind, he is laid out. They both fight in the aisle, and they get counted out at 10:01 as the crowd boos the announcement that this is a draw. I hated finishes like this. Like, sure. On a show like this, it's like, well, why do we have to have a no contest here? Really? We got to protect Brutus fucking Beefcake?
You could even buy it on like a lesser pay-per-view, but I mean, this is WrestleMania.
No title. There's nothing to protect.
Yeah.
Well, why are we getting this?
Yeah. Yeah. And the match itself wasn't very good either.
No. A big downgrade here for Ted DiBiase after the performances he put on the year prior. And
absolutely.
Here he is a year later.
Yeah.
A number of guys that you would find really falling down the card year over year.
Mm-hmm.
Then Lord Alfred Hayes is with the Bushwhackers at the WrestleMania brunch, and they're eating. No one can understand them because their mouths are full of food, and Lord Alfred Hayes calls them offensive in and out of the ring and sends it back to a more civilized environment.
What else did Lord Alfred Hayes do at this time?
Oh, he did commentary. He did backstage interviews. I always liked Lord Alfred Hayes a lot.
It just, I mean, you get your role at WrestleMania, and it's to do a fake interview with the Bushwhackers as they speak with their mouths full of food, you know?
I was a big Lord Alfred Hayes fan, and my word!
He was definitely the perfect guy for this, because, you know, he's the proper British guy.
He had some awesome, like, comedic timing.
Yeah.
Just great lines, great comebacks, and just a very witty announcer that was sometimes very few and far between. Mm-hmm. He was great. Then, my highlight of the show was the Rougeaus coming out to the Rougeau Brothers theme. My favorite theme song of all time. Which way we can hear all of our favorite themes later this week at alancross.ca, correct?
No.
Oh, shit. Did I fuck it up?
Oh, you might be right.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Is that the website?
Our friend Brent Chittenden has...
You had no idea what I was even talking about.
I did. Oh, okay. I just don't know if that's the site because he writes for a number of sites. Anyway.
Yeah, so... I think it's going on here.
All right. Anyway, our friend Brent Chittenden is... He's written an article. He released one last week of the best wrestling music factions, which you can go check out. I believe it is alancross.ca. But this week coming up, he's asked us to contribute to his list of the best wrestling theme songs of all time. And John and I both contributed our list, so you'll see selections from that. So keep checking that. You can follow him at BC Nerdhole on Twitter.
Great. So you can check that out. And so as I mentioned, they came out. And then the Bushwhackers come out. And Ventura notes that these guys look like they're on the joy juice or some other kind of juice.
Yeah.
What a...
I noticed that.
What else could he possibly have been referring
to? Well, what is the joy juice? That's what I want to know.
Jesus Christ. I mean, unless he was just trying to say they were drunk.
No, but seriously, he wasn't.
Or some kind of juice.
He wasn't being subtle about that at all. This is basically saying, you know, these guys.
Which I've got to say, of all the people here on this card, including the winner of the supposed Jesse the Body Award, Rick Rude.
Yes.
Bushwhackers would be at the bottom of my list in terms of guys I'd be reprimanding for the physique thing.
Well, I guess joy juice would be like alcohol or something.
Maybe they were. Maybe that was their gimmick. They were drunk all the time.
Sure. I'd buy that.
So, another pretty shitty match here between the Rougeaus and the Bushwhackers. Butch grabs Jimmy Hart's jacket, and then the Rougeaus attack. The crowd was just deathly silent here. Crowd again this year. They're a bit more livelier than the year prior, but still a bad crowd.
Well, I would say that they were really good.
Really?
Not. I mean, amazing, but like I thought they were pretty good on this.
There were matches where I felt like my TV was broken. It was so quiet. Raymond, applied a Boston Crab to Luke, and then Jacques stomped on him. There's a double back elbow by the Rougeaus as Luke stumbles down, and then the Rougeaus hug and celebrate as Raymond then turns around, gets hit with the battering ram, and then the double stomach breaker, as Gorilla Monsoon identified it as.
Stomach breaker.
I've broken my stomach. I have a cast on it. And they pinned Raymond at 5'11", and Ventura just says, the Rougeaus were off tonight. This match, not good.
No, it wasn't. No, this was a very untechnical.
Untechnical.
Yes, but I will say, this period of the WWE, there were certainly a lot of very colorful tag teams, a lot of very colorful characters.
Oh, I love the Russos. Whether it was Jimmy Hart, the outfits they had, the flags, the song, just a great tag team.
The packaging of all these guys, all these brands, I thought was done really well. Everybody was distinct, and you know. Just really nice, really nostalgic for all that.
Then we go to yet another broadcaster on this team. Sean Mooney is in the aisle with a bunch of fans, and Butch licks him on the way back after their big win.
Yeah.
That was his sole segment, getting licked.
I don't know if they'd be allowed to do that today. I mean, with so much scares about, like, STDs and...
Oh, yeah, probably not. They'd probably get attacked. They'd be heels now.
Right, I'm going to threaten to lick you.
Yeah,
if you don't.
They came out like around the SARS crisis or something. Their gimmick would be done there.
Yeah. Well, this was the era of HIV. Although you can't transmit HIV through saliva.
Through licking?
I don't think so. I don't know.
Next matchup.
I don't think so. But
two relatively newcomers to the WWF: Mr. Perfect and the Blue Blazer. Owen Hart under a mask, his first WrestleMania. Both these men's first WrestleMania. Perfect, so early in his career, prior to even having theme music at this point.
Yeah, that's right.
Ventura calls this the sleeper match of the show. And Blazer hits a hip toss, a standing drop kick, goes for a splash, but Perfect gets his knees up. And then Blazer goes for a crucifix, gets a two count. Then Blazer is dropped, and Perfect hits the Perfect Plex and gets the win. Only 5 minutes and 28 seconds, but probably the best match up until this point in the show, which wasn't saying a lot.
No, exactly how I felt. I mean, I think... It was odd that this was out of WrestleMania. Was there any type of feud going into this? Because this really just
felt like wrestling challenge.
It felt like a TV match, a guy versus a jobber here in the Blue Blazer. And I guess some guys get a gimmick like Mr. Perfect, and some guys get a gimmick like the Blue Blazer.
Do you find that the show goes by quicker when you have these shorter matches, and it just seems like it's a... if you have a short attention span.
No, I just find them quite unnecessary. I think it's a waste of everybody's time.
That should have been it. You should have been at this WrestleMania with signs. Waste of my time.
Yeah.
Finkel then introduces Jesse Ventura. This is the same spot they did the prior year, WrestleMania 4, where he just poses to the crowd. The crowd takes him as a babyface. They chant Jesse.
Yeah, it's just a...
Why didn't Gorilla get this treatment?
He's not a movie star.
Could have given a little pose routine.
Yeah, I don't know. I imagine this would have been building to something like...
you know what? They did all last year. They dropped all those hints of Ventura, I'm going to come out of retirement. They did the same stuff this time around, right, too, but never led anywhere.
It's just something he did, I guess.
Then Lord Alfred Hayes recaps the WrestleMania 5K run on the boardwalk featuring Mr. Fuji.
Are you kidding me? Like, was this a real thing?
Yeah.
WrestleMania
this is a legit 5K run.
5K run?
And
really?
Fuji ran it in a suit. A tuxedo.
Yeah.
To show that he's in shape for his match.
Yes.
Were you offended by Mr. Fuji?
No, why? Why would I be?
I don't know.
Why would I be offended by him?
Yeah, some people say he played to a very cheap stereotype.
That's pro wrestling, though. I'm not going to complain about stereotypes in pro wrestling.
I think your dad should go as Mr. Fuji for Halloween one year.
Now, that's offensive.
Why?
Why? Because he's Asian? He's
no, because your dad has a bit of a resemblance to Mr. Fuji.
Oh, that's even more racist.
No, take away the beard that Fuji had, goatee.
I'm just shaking my head right now. I can't believe you said that. You're going to ask me to play Taka Michinoku, I bet.
You don't look anything like Taka Michinoku.
Or Tajiri, how about that?
You look like... who do you best resemble? Maybe if you grew your hair out more.
Better watch your words right now.
Maybe a Kenta. Let's see if you look like Kenta.
God.
Would you have done this way if there was a 5K run this week on the boardwalk?
Would I have?
They should have brought that back this year.
I want to do a 5K at some point in my life, but I don't think I'd be ready.
I did a 7K a few years ago.
Wow.
Nearly died doing it.
Yeah.
Come on, this isn't offensive at all,
photos
actually.
Of Kenta?
Yeah.
I look nothing like that.
What are you talking about? You look a little Kenta-ish. You look very Kenta-ish, dude. That looks a lot like, in that picture at least, not so much where he has the longer hair.
That looks nothing like me. That looks like any other Asian person. Come on.
What do you mean any other Asian person? There's an Asian look?
Yeah, there is. That's actually.
That is offensive. Very offensive. All right. 5K run.
So why did they stop doing these WrestleMania running marathons?
Because the fucking show is a marathon for most people. Yeah. They can't run a race the same weekend. But Mr. Fujine, first of all, the guy cheats at the start before the gun even goes off. I loved him, dude. And he's just waddling with a cane and a tuxedo.
And then, like, the best part is, like, the camera follows him as he's ahead of the pack, and the rest passes. Everybody just runs past him. It's just... But then somehow he finishes.
Dude, they literally probably just stopped there waiting for everyone to return, then he just ran back.
Well, obviously, he didn't run the whole thing. But
I would have loved to have just watched them shoot this.
But you're telling me, like, the whole point of this whole sketch was to show that Mr. Fuji's still in shape?
Well, he's about to wrestle.
Then why put him in the outfit and everything? Like, why make it so campy?
That's his look.
All right.
Couldn't have him running those tights he wore.
Didn't even break a sweat. He was running in his,
because he's a great cardio.
Dress shoes, the cane. Yeah.
So that was one of the better parts of this whole show.
That was good. Yeah.
I guess this was like the unofficial, like, intermission, perhaps, because then we got Run DMC in the ring with the WrestleMania rap.
There's going to be more entertainment. How about these guys? Run DMC.
Yo, WrestleMania 5, man. Check this out, man. It's gonna be Ravishing Rick Rude. You know all that stuff he do, right? The Rude Awakening is gonna be in effect. Then you're gonna have the Ultimate Warrior going for his in his battle at WrestleMania 5 at True Plaza.
Trump Plaza.
Be there or be square.
All right, I'll tell you what. I like these guys. They are Run DMC. And they're going to be gracing us with the WrestleMania rap next Sunday afternoon in Atlantic City.
And this was the most the crowd I think had been into anything in the whole show up until this point.
Sure.
A lot of fans have Run DMC here.
Yeah, and Jam Master Jay.
Yes, rest in peace.
Yes. Was he, was this a song that they actually released or what? Because I couldn't seem to find this.
I'm not sure. I don't know. I think they just probably did it for the event, didn't release anything. I don't know how the WrestleMania rap would have really sold.
Are you kidding me? It would have sold huge.
Yeah, maybe. Just Run DMC attached to it.
Rock Rumble?
This was like after their like fourth album, I think. So they were like at a huge popularity peak.
Wow. Cool.
You're giving me this look like... are you talking about?
No, I'm impressed.
I was a big fan of Run DMC. I read a whole book on Jam Master Jay.
Wow. Well, it was really hard to hear them, I found, actually. I didn't think that they were mic'd very well. But
wow, it was a big convention.
What did they say? What were some of these lyrics?
WrestleMania. And then they said that over and over again.
Right. Oh, cool.
Yeah. From there... We go to a recap of the Survivor Series angle where Mr. Fuji turns on Demolition and they body slam him. And then later the powers of pain help him up, including, we saw that an angle on TV. And then Okerlund is with Demolition where they refer to him as Fuge the Stooge.
Right.
Very clever. So his name's Mr. Fuji. Yeah. And they think he's a stooge and thus the marriage. Demolition against the Powers of Pain and Mr. Fuji for the tag titles. 3-on-2 tag situation. A few contenders here, Way. Warlord and Barbarian.
Yeah, I'll go with that.
The Powers of Pain.
Sure.
This was just 1980s at its finest.
Yep.
Big, muscled-up teams with paint and leather and no technical... Or not very much technical skill.
Not part of the job description.
I mean, Demolition here, they were the smooth workers here in comparison. Warlord, what a run that guy got. Unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
That guy got quite a few years in him in the WWF.
I'd say Mr. Fuji was moving pretty well.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Fuji was... Oh, there was one bump here we'll get to. The crowd here seemed to just fall back asleep after they got up for Run DMC. Fuji is choking whenever the referee's back is turned, and then they get the heat on Axe. Fuji goes for a top rope leg drop, and disaster nearly ensued. If this guy ever got a hip replacement, it was because of this spot. He slid at, like, his heels hit the mat, and he just slid like he had like slipped on a floor that was wet.
Like Kevin Ware.
Kevin Ware?
Isn't that the guy who broke his leg yesterday?
Oh, the football player.
No, the basketball player.
Basketball, whatever. I guess so. I didn't see it. I heard it was horrific, though.
Yeah, it was disgusting.
6 inches of his bone came out?
It was worse than Sid.
Ugh. Like, I can't look at that
the
stuff.
The bone, actually. You could see.
Oh, I don't want to know, man. I don't want to know. Please, don't. That's disgusting.
Yeah.
You watched it?
I saw it.
Oh,
I had to.
Were you watching the basketball game?
No, I saw it afterwards. It's online.
You didn't have to see it.
Yeah, you got to watch it now. I'm gonna look this up for you.
Oh, it's probably here. I don't know if I want to see this.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, you do. The people want to hear you.
Kevin Ware injury versus Duke. Do I really want to see it? Am I gonna vomit?
Yeah, no, you're not. Come on, you're ridiculous. Just put it on.
Where is? Oh, Jesus Christ. Is that him? Oh.
He's been a presence from outside during this tournament.
Oh, his face is telling me more than I want to see. Oh. Oh, my goodness. I can't see it.
That's not. Yeah, don't worry. Don't worry. They're not going to replay it or anything.
Oh,
just stay with
it.
Just stay with it.
These guys are nearly vomiting at how gross this is. Oh, fuck. Fuck, fuck.
No, don't worry, dude. They're not going to show it. They're not going to show it. Again.
Oh,
just
fuck.
Just watch for all these people's reactions.
The anticipation is worse than the visual. Fuck.
He's okay.
That's not him. He's standing.
That's not him. That's
the guy who just watched it.
Yeah, this is the teammates.
Oh, fuck. Oh, fuck. Oh, shit. Oh, God. I can't watch it again. That is fucking too much.
Oh, I'm sure he's okay.
Oh,
it's not that
God
bad.
God damn. From fucking basketball. How the fuck does that happen?
Yeah, I don't know. And people think MMA is...
remember when that happened to Corey Hill?
Yeah, but his bone didn't pop out.
Oh, but his leg fucking went 90 degrees.
Oh, yeah.
To the right.
That was bad.
That was really terrible.
Yep.
Oh, God. I can't. Those injuries are just too much, man. Where the hell were we? Oh, yeah, Fuji. His bump was nowhere near that. Fuji got salt as the Warlord held him. Smash then ducked, and the salt went into Warlord's eyes, and the Demolition went to clothesline Fuji and literally, like, tapped him with their hands. Axe hit they hit their finish off the top rope with Axe hitting an elbow drop as he was set onto the knee of Smash, and they got the win. 8:56, and Demolition retaining the tag team championships. Belts they won the prior year at WrestleMania 4, so it held these for over a year now.
Which I think at the time was the norm. You know, guys wouldn't always drop titles every other week.
What a concept. And they won matches, too.
Well, there are much fewer, for far fewer shows at the time, too, right? I didn't find much drama in Fuji's involvement at all here. Like, I thought the whole draw of this was them teasing, beating up this manager, but when it came time to down to it, he was just another participant.
Yeah, he wasn't. Actually, Fuji has won more tag titles than the Powers of Pain ever did.
Oh.
He won a WWF tag titles once upon a time. Shivani is outside of Randy Savage's locker room as he's just going crazy, throwing stuff. They kick out Shivani and tells Hogan that he is ready. And Ventura says, we might have seen the last of Tony Schiavone. Which would have been a great send-off for the guy, but he did remain around for the rest of 89. Then, the real main event, the true Mega Plat Powers, Dino Bravo and Ronnie Garvin, straight out of Montreal, competing here.
Yeah.
Dino Bravo with Frenchie Martin and Finkel. They introduce both guys. They're in the ring, and then Finkel introduces Superfly Jimmy Snuka to come out, poses, and just this awkward introduction as the guy's got to wait in the ring for this guy to come out for his pop. What odd timing.
Then he just leaves.
Yeah, he just showed up and left.
This is weird.
Great, Jimmy Snuka's back.
Had nothing to do with the match.
No, which is very weird because, to me, part of the show was built around this was Roddy Piper's return for Piper's Pit.
Right.
And what's more famous than Piper's Pit with Jimmy Snuka?
True.
That would have been a great surprise guest.
It wouldn't have fit in with what they're doing, though.
Oh, they could have been aligned together instead of before, and then Snuka and Piper take out Morton Downey with a coconut.
Yeah, I don't know.
And burn him with a cigarette.
I thought the we'll get to that.
Okay. Dino Bravo and Ronnie Garvin. The match did eventually begin. Bravo attacked Garvin as he went to throw his towel out to the audience, and Gorilla got on Jesse's case for never throwing out his earrings. And Jesse just laughed at this comparison. And you're comparing my diamond earrings to this guy's sweaty towel and throwing it away.
Yeah.
Would you keep a towel if it got tossed to you as a kid?
Depending on who it was from. Yeah, definitely. So the sweat of my idols.
Wow. You could sell that.
Yeah.
They got into some near falls on Dino Bravo. Some chops by Garvin in the corner. Garvin had been in the NWA prior to this, had a less than stellar run as NWA champion in 87, and then coming over here. He was over 40 at this point. Hit an atomic drop out of the corner by Bravo, and then a side suplex. A side suplex for the win at 4 minutes. And then afterwards, Garvin attacks both Bravo and Frenchie Martin.
The babyface.
Gives the Garvin stomp to Frenchie Martin. And this was my favorite Jesse Ventura outrage of the show. He was disgusted. Said, I've lost all my respect for Ronnie Garvin. As did I.
Yeah.
Pulled a fucking Paul Daly here on Josh Koscheck.
What a sore loser.
Yeah.
You lost the match fair.
Fair. Clean floss. And Gorilla just defending this criminal. The best, though, was where he goes to grab the Quebec flag like he's going to break it. The guy who's from Montreal.
Who does?
Both are from Montreal.
Oh, they're both
And
from
Garvin
Montreal.
Was going to break the Quebec flag. I loved it.
Oh, that's great. We can't both be from representing our country.
So, there you go. What a 4 minutes. That's thanks for coming out.
No, this was definitely another one of those TV matches that didn't need to be on this card.
Next up was a tag match with the Brainbusters. Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard with Bobby Heenan taking on Strikeforce. Not Scott Coker or Frank Shamrock. It was Tito Santana and Rick Martel. And this is where, as Wei mentioned, they played up that Strikeforce had not teamed up for a long, long time. They did an injury angle with Martel all the way back the prior spring because Martel wanted to take some time off to spend with his family. So they took him off TV for like 8 months or something like that. So a lengthy period of time. And then here they were coming back and teaming them here at WrestleMania.
And what about the Brainbusters?
They had come over from the NWA, and they didn't remain in the company super long. They came in, I think, just after. Were they on? They weren't on the WrestleMania 4 card, were they? So they would have come in shortly thereafter. And then eventually Anderson, it was when Flair, I think, got back to booking that Anderson returned, and they were supposed to bring in Blanchard, and it ended up as soon as they found out Blanchard was leaving the WWF, well, the WWF all of a sudden tested him, and he had cocaine in his system.
Oh, wow. That's convenient.
Didn't get a job in WWF, and WCW wouldn't take him back because of it. So,
like, imagine that. Like, we can test you at any point, but we choose not to. We'll only test you when we need it, when we need the leverage.
Yep. I remember when they were taking us to our seats at WrestleMania last year. They had to take us through this ridiculous maze, and we passed by Tully Blanchard just standing there in, like, this dugout and just looking at the crowd, and he just looked, like, amazed, just sitting there, because he went to the Hall of Fame the night before.
Right.
And just standing around.
Mm-hmm.
Next
time.
Little
Bow Wow was there as well.
That's right. That's right. I would have gone up to both of them had I known, and we could have asked Tully about this cocaine bust he had in...
No, you wouldn't.
The drug test.
No, that's incredibly rude.
Yeah. Tully, can you tell us what happened with the cocaine in 89?
You wouldn't do that.
So the Brainbusters and Strikeforce, Anderson attacked Martel with a knee, and Strikeforce did simultaneous figure fours at one spot, locking them on. And then there was a blind tag as Santana then goes for a flying forearm, which was his finish, and Blanchard ducks out of the way, and Santana takes out Rick Martel. And Santana then sends Blanchard into the knee of Anderson, continues selling as they had the heat on Santana, finally goes for the tag, but Martel walks off of the apron and then goes to the back as the crowd boos. They were definitely reacting to this. And then the Brainbusters continue to beat down Santana, spinebuster to Tito, and he tries to fight back, but Blanchard blocks a monkey flip. They hit a spike pile driver, and Anderson pins Santana at 9:17. I thought Tito was really good in this match. You know, it was just the baby face that was just getting destroyed.
Absolutely. I thought the angle was done really well at the end. I mean, how long had these two been teaming up until this point?
It had been about... year and a half or so.
Okay, that's quite a while. And so, something like this happens, it's a pretty big deal. So, yeah, really well done, I thought.
And then Okerlund was in the back with Martel, and he's just disgusted at the actions of Rick Martel. And Martel is tired of Santana, and he's sick of him. And this was the beginning of the model character mm-hmm. that he would go on to reprise. But never really getting that big blow-off match with Santana. They never really went to it.
Well, it kind of seemed odd to go from this guy in Strikeforce to a model.
Well, he just...
How's that logical?
Well, he went from having to share the spotlight to being in the spotlight on his own and realizing, goddamn.
Well, what time did he have to model, to begin his modeling career while he was a part of Strikeforce?
Well, because now he's paying more attention to it. The photographers are coming to him.
What?
He started marketing his own cologne.
Fine, fine, whatever. Anyway, no, nothing against the model character. I just think the transition's, a little odd. I mean, here's this straight-up wrestler, and all of a sudden he's this cartoony model.
Well, maybe they believe that,
Granted, like, Shawn Michaels, like, you know, very much the same thing.
He went from...
Rocker.
Slamming and jamming to breaking hearts.
Yeah.
Overnight.
Yeah.
He was suddenly a womanizer.
Yeah. No, that's fine.
JBL. Alcoholic to stockbroker.
Yes.
Some wrestlers are multifaceted,
they
right?
They are. They're almost schizophrenic.
Yeah. Sometimes even have to change their names to reflect their passion
yeah.
in life.
Yeah. They're deep.
The ring is then set up. Oh, Monsoon gives us a lecture about it's an unwritten law. You settle your problems out of the ring, not inside the ring.
Okay.
You don't do it like Strikeforce did. That's not how you conduct business.
Right.
If you're Rick Martel.
Yes.
So then the ring is set up for Piper's Pit, and Howard Finkel had this way of just doing his introductions where it was just like, a man, who did this? A man? Okay, let's get to the introduction. And we thought Roddy Piper was coming out, but instead it was Brother Love. Bruce Pritchard, the man handling TNA Creative,
that's right,
came out mm-hmm. for this segment, and everyone was groaning that, oh, they're swerving us. We're not getting Roddy Piper.
He's wearing a kilt.
So, Brother Love comes out, and Bruce Pritchard, he was a massive Roddy Piper fan.
Oh.
So, I'm sure that he had studied this interview style for years and years. But that being said, I found this really fell flat.
I did too. He does his Roddy Piper impression.
Like he's interviewing Roddy Piper, but he's playing both characters.
Yeah.
I never liked the Brother Love character. I always hated this character.
It looked like a Catch-23 sketch, what he was doing here.
Catch-23 is much funnier.
Oh, he's
than
not
this.
Nearly as funny as a Wildcat offense.
Oh, he was way better as a one-man
yeah.
offense.
Yes.
What did you think of that one-person snake scene he did?
Well, we should let people know. John and I went and Jay and my friend Gordon. Yeah, we all went out to an improv show, sketch comedy show on Friday, and there was this guy who basically... typically, they're teams of two, and this guy basically was a team of one, and he would do scenes where he would play multiple characters talking to himself. And
it's one-man improv? That's fucking tough.
It sounds kind of lame, but, like, this guy was hilarious.
He's really good.
He ended up winning the whole thing, and, like, he's just, like, because he would be so fast, and, like, you could feel that every character that he would play in the scene was like pretty well developed and pretty different from everybody else. So not like Brother Love here, but the snake scene, that snake scene was great.
Like he painted this entire picture.
Yeah.
Like I felt like I was in this jungle.
And this is all improvised. Like somebody just said, Anaconda. And that was it. Like that's all he needed.
And he developed this whole world in like 4 minutes on his own with multiple characters. It's incredible to see.
Yeah.
Brother Love, this no comparison here. So Love tries to do this interview with himself, referring to Brother Rodney, and the crowd is just groaning here. It goes on for a few minutes. And then Morton Downey Jr., who was a popular radio and talk show host at the time, comes down, as Monsoon notes, always puffing on that weed, isn't he? And Morton Downey Jr., a notorious smoker.
Yeah, ended up dying from lung cancer.
Yeah, he actually became a big advocate against smoking during his later years. He died in 2001 and comes out and makes a fat joke towards Brother Love. And then Roddy Piper finally comes out and Piper takes the microphone away from Brother Love and basically a bunch of Scott jokes, the talk about kilts. There was a penis joke here, all met with silence. tore the kilt off of Pritchard, who ran to the back in his red trunks, and then it left Piper and Morton Downey together. And Downey's just kind of in his own world here. I don't think quite knowing what am I doing in this ring or being in this building. And he kept blowing cigarette smoke into Roddy Piper's face, to which Piper kept telling him to stop it. Made a mom joke. And then he asked him about his catchphrase that Morton had, zip it. So he explained what zip it means.
And what does it mean?
Well, Way, it doesn't mean whip it. It means zip it.
Yeah, that's basically what he said. I found this segment. Well, it definitely picked up once Brother Love got out of there. I thought the real energy of the scene was between Piper and Morton Downey for sure. But it was odd in that it didn't necessarily feel scripted because none of it really made that much sense. But at the same time, it felt really personal. Like, it felt almost real how much these two disliked each other.
Well, it led to Morton Downey Jr. comparing Piper to a transvestite. His word, not mine. And continually blew smoke in Piper's face and just was egging him on. So finally, Piper relents and says, you know what? Light me up one of those. And then as Morton Downey Jr. turns around, Piper reveals a fire extinguisher and he sprays Downey with the fire extinguisher.
This was really bad. You can get
bad segment or
no.
Dangerous.
Dangerous to be sprayed with a fire extinguisher.
Well,
it's like full force dried ice. You can get asthma.
Yeah, that's. I think that was the whole point of the. We always got the fire extinguisher spot in those hardcore matches, and I always hated those because it was like, this is actually semi-dangerous for a guy to take, but the audience really doesn't appreciate that because they've probably never been hit by a fire extinguisher. Mm-hmm. So it's like you guys are just hurting yourselves without any reaction from people caring.
Pretty much, yeah. Anyway, this is a classic moment, though, of course. A classic celebrity moment involving Roddy Piper. I thought Piper was great here.
Is this a classic moment?
I thought. I mean, you see it all the time. In replays.
Maybe Morton Downey Jr. should have gone into the Hall of Fame one of these years.
I don't know about that.
No?
I'm not sure. I mean, this was only one segment, and he's dead, so, you know, I think
posthumous award.
The thing is, I think for the celebrity things, they like the stars to actually be there. You know what I mean?
That sounds so cold.
No, but come on.
They like people to be alive.
Yeah. Yeah. Unless you're a wrestler.
Yeah. Okerlund's in the back, and he's excited. Are you ready for an all-new Hulk Hogan? The No Holds Barred trailer aired, and Okerlund saying that you can bet it will be a blockbuster, which I'm glad no one actually put money down on. It was not.
It was so funny, this trailer. And I think they pretty much aired the trailer, like, the exact same trailer back a few months ago on Raw when they were basically re-releasing the DVD as a campy piece of shit movie.
In 89, this was the serious trailer.
Yeah, yeah. They definitely had a lot of time to fill on this show, and I don't know why, because
WrestleMania's got to be 3.5 hours.
That long. But an awesome trailer.
So, from there, Sean Mooney is with Donald Trump.
Thank you, Gene. I'm joining Donald J. Trump, the illustrious Donald Trump. And, Mr. Trump, this is the second WrestleMania you have hosted in a row. Can you give us some idea what an event of this magnitude means not only to Atlantic City, but to the Trump organization?
Well, it's brought people from thousands of miles away. It's been fantastic. It's been unbelievable. The traffic, the numbers of people. We're really honored to be here and honored that you folks joined us. It's a great honor.
Well, I want to thank you for taking the time to speak with us. I want to ask you this, though. Have the casinos been busy?
They are packed. The whole town is packed. It's been a real boom to the town. It's been just a great thing and an unbelievable event. Everybody's excited. We're all enjoying ourselves.
Well,
and thank you.
I know I'm going to leave a few dollars in Atlantic City.
Well, I hope so.
Well, thanks again for joining us. While the Macho Man, Randy Savage, and Hulk Hogan still have to worry about winning, it appears that Donald J. Trump already has. Now, there are winners here as well. This capacity crowd thus far has gotten more than there's money's worth. Right now, let's go back to you, Gorilla. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is one of the worst interviews I've ever seen. Mooney was stuttering.
Yeah.
He was nervous.
He looked nervous to be talking to this rich man.
Oh, he was extremely uncomfortable here. This entire interview was uncomfortable to watch. Thankfully, it was short. And then Jesse Ventura, he is just seething here in anger. Hogan is stepping onto his domain of Hollywood and said that he's going to lose his job after he loses to Savage tonight, and Hollywood isn't big enough for the both of them. Hogan can drive my limo.
So clearly they're building to some type of interaction or matchup between
Or Jesse was just shooting his own angles.
You think so?
I don't know.
Well, what exactly happened? Well, why did they waste time on this?
I don't know. It's just Jesse reacting. Okay. I don't know how well planned out it was.
I'm assuming they also needed time to clear the Piper's Pit set as well.
Because they had to make room for more and more matches. And we had a video on Savage and Hogan here going back to WrestleMania 4 and then wins together at SummerSlam and Survivor Series. And then the main event angle where Liz got knocked off the apron that we mentioned. Then Okerlund is with Hogan in the back.
Oh, God.
Do you want to describe this promo? Once again, the end of the earth and Donald Trump will be safe.
Yeah, I don't even know how to describe this one. Like last year, he cut a promo about how once he gets in there with Andre, I don't know, somehow the New York City is going to flood and Donald Trump's family will be holding on to the top of the Empire State Building, and it'll take Hulk Hogan to swim across to save them, and Donald Trump family will jump onto Hogan's back as Hogan backstrokes them to safety. That was the promo, like his words, not mine. And this time, I guess he's taking the mega powers explosion metaphor a bit.
It's going to be an explosion.
He's like, yeah, Donald Trump has brought in seismologists here to the Trump Plaza because they're here to check the foundation. Like, these are his actual words in this promo. They're here to check the foundation because this whole building should explode. So I guess this year they're preparing for an earthquake. It just lasted forever, this promo. It was ridiculous.
Well, this was just an insane Hulk Hogan promo, as usual. Then we got Andre the Giant against Jake Roberts with Big John Studd as the guest referee. And this is when even the year prior, I mean, it was really tough to watch Andre as he got so immobile. I mean, he was really, could barely move at this point. It was clearly just trying to get by doing the least. And for me, it was always sad to watch him during these years, especially like 88, 89. And they just tried to keep, I shouldn't even say kept it short. They almost went 10 minutes here.
Yeah.
This was longer than the prior year with Hogan. So
we'll talk about the match.
Not a great. No. Stud here came out to Jim Duggan's theme song.
Oh, he did.
Yeah, I don't know why we needed a guest referee here, but we had one. John Studd, interesting note, won the Royal Rumble in 1989, and look what the Royal Rumble got you here in '89. Fucking guest ref spot, middle of the card. So don't be, complaining too much about guys winning the Rumble and then opening up WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm.
From there, the turnbuckle pad had been removed at the beginning of the match, and Andre chokes Roberts, stands on his chest. Roberts fires back, ties up Andre in the ropes, which was a very clever spot, I guess, in hindsight, because this thing got a pop every time. Andre getting tied up in the ropes.
Yeah, sure.
Easy spot.
Yep.
Gets to rest.
Yeah.
And that's all. But he got out, choked Jake, then a chop sent Jake to the floor. Andre and Studd are then arguing. Of course, these two feuded and had a match at the first WrestleMania. And then as they're arguing, Jake gets Damian, throws it into the ring, but Andre then hits Studd from behind, shoves Andre, and then DiBiase attacks Jake from behind on the floor, steals Damian to the back. Sorry, he hadn't thrown Damian in because first DiBiase ran away with it. Roberts chased him down, slammed Virgil, and then took the snake, threw it into the ring, and Andre was scared of snakes. That was his gimmick. And ran away, and Studd just called for the bell right away at 9:39 for the DQ, and Jake Roberts gets the win because of Andre attacking John Studd.
Mm-hmm.
Bad match.
It was a really slow and boring match that put me to sleep. I fell asleep.
You passed out during this
one. I did, yeah.
Well, Sean Mooney is in the nosebleed seats with a fan that just repeatedly says, "Jake's the best! He's the best! Jake's the best!" Great insight.
That's why they
This was an old school tout.
Yeah, that's why they don't talk to fans anymore.
Shivani is then in the back with Sensational Sherry, who also takes her time to knock Rockin' Robin's performance, saying that she can sing and wrestle better than Rockin' Robin, and then laughs at Miss Elizabeth because the mega powers are going to explode later today.
Yeah.
Ha. Huh. Then we got another tag match. Greg Valentine and the Honky Tonk Man with Jimmy Hart taking on the Hart Foundation. This was before Valentine and Honky Tonk Man officially formed Rhythm and Blues. Mm. And Valentine would dye his hair black. And Hart here, Bret Hart, came the closest of anyone to slipping on the stairs coming down the aisle, but remained standing. Hart starts and gets the better of Honky Tonk Man. Neidhart gets a slingshot into the ring with a shoulder block from outside. Then Valentine gets the advantage on Hart. They're making frequent tags. Honky Tonk Man hits the shake, rattle, and roll to Hart, but then tags in Valentine, and the announcers are dumbfounded by him hitting his finish and then tagging out. And Hart finally makes the hot tag to Neidhart. Valentine cuts him off, and Neidhart gets the megaphone from Jimmy Hart, sends it to Bret Hart, who knocks out Honky Tonk Man behind the ref's back. The baby faces, then, with the help of the megaphone, get the win at 7 minutes and 40 seconds. Mm-hmm. Jesse is just losing his mind here.
An all right match.
These assholes.
Yeah.
Video recap of the muscle pose down between the Ultimate Warrior and Rick Rude from the Royal Rumble, setting up the Intercontinental title match with Ultimate Warrior defending against Rick Rude, who is with Bobby Heenan. And Rude takes his robe off, and he has the title airbrushed onto his tights. Warrior comes in, there's a bear hug, series of scoop slams. He goes for a big splash, but Rude gets his knees up, and then Rude hits a pile driver and wears down Warrior until Warrior starts shaking the ropes for his comeback, hits a running shoulder block to Rude, and then Warrior misses a splash in the corner, but Warrior blocks the Rude awakening, and as he goes for a vertical suplex, Bobby Heenan pulls the Warrior's leg so that Rude falls on top of Warrior, and Heenan continues to hold the leg down, and Rude pins Warrior at 9:43 to win the title, and this would later set up a big house show run between these two, but this was really played up as Bobby Heenan's first championship as a manager.
No way. I thought for a Warrior match, this was actually pretty good.
Rude was always able to get the best out of this guy. I think probably the best opponent for Warrior was Rick Rude in his history.
Finish was good. Yeah.
Then we got a big follow-up to that was Jim Duggan against Bad News Brown.
Like, why?
I don't know why.
Why was this here?
I have no clue.
Why?
You needed to have Bad News Brown and Jim Duggan. It's WrestleMania.
I just found, like, you were asking me, do these short matches help pick up the pace? It actually slows down the pace to me. I mean, I just get to the stuff I hate to see, the stuff I care about.
So from there, the match begins. Brown attacks Duggan as he enters the ring, and then Duggan Irish whips him into the corner, clotheslines Brown, and then exits to the floor. Brown gets the advantage back into the ring, and then Duggan is thrown into the post on the floor, and Brown goes for the ghetto blaster. Duggan ducks, hits a running tackle, and then Brown goes to the floor and gets a chair. So Duggan then goes and gets his 2x4, and they start having like this duel with their weapons in the ring, and the match is thrown out at 3 minutes and 48 seconds.
You can't have a chair and 2x4 fight. And
are you kidding me? We couldn't have a finish booked for Bad News Brown and Jim Duggan?
No, these people wanted to see a chair and a 2x4 hit each other and a bell.
God.
These matches are so boring.
And then Duggan had this gross, like, snot under his nose that Ventura called attention to after the match, looking just disgusting.
And then even, like, Gorilla felt the need to defend that. Oh, you never had that when you're wrestling?
Fucking Monsoon. He'll defend any babyface to the death. Yeah. Then the best interview on the show was Gene Okerlund with Terry Taylor, the Red Rooster, who had to literally play a rooster come to life. Like, it wasn't just like some nickname. It was, no, you are a rooster. His setup for his promo, this is what he described. Said he can't wait to get his rooster claws into Bobby Heenan, and says that when he wins in his match over Heenan, it'll be a great day in the barnyard. Like, he's literally an animal. Literally, he is a rooster that wrestles.
He's a human. He's like a Ninja Turtle, but like,
he is roosters. Human cockfighting in representation.
He's literally human, a human cockfighter.
Human cockfighter.
Yeah.
So that is what we got here. Bobby Heenan, accompanied by the Brooklyn Brawler, taking on the Red Rooster. We should mention that after the Warrior lost the IC title, he beat up Heenan in the post-match. So Heenan was selling that beatdown. And Ventura says that Heenan is going to turn the Rooster into a chicken.
Oh.
Heenan, I enjoyed how Heenan was wearing the Andre singlet with the one strap.
Yeah.
Heenan was great here. This match only went 32 seconds, exactly how long it needed to be. Heenan actually Irish whipped Rooster into the turnbuckle, ran at him where Rooster got out of the way. Heenan went shoulder first into the post, and Rooster pinned him in 32 seconds. Brawler then attacked him from behind afterwards, but Rooster made his comeback and chased the Brooklyn Brawler off. So at least this was short and painless.
I was happy about that, yeah.
And that takes us to the main event. And first we had Okerlund with Miss Elizabeth, who says she will be in a neutral corner, will continue to support both men, and she just hopes that neither is seriously injured. No one was better at playing Miss Elizabeth than Miss Elizabeth. Yeah, this was the most calm and yet concerned woman. Like, no theatrics, nothing over the top. It's like this didn't even feel like a wrestling promo. It felt like it was a family member they were interviewing who believed that these two men are literally going to explode.
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly.
So she was great. Shivani's in the back saying all the wrestlers have emptied in the back to go watch the main event. Probably in reference to Flair and Steamboat instead of this. But nonetheless, Mooney is then in the audience. Crowd is split. And then Savage comes out. Then Elizabeth gets her own entrance. And Savage has this look like, the fuck? She gets my music too? As she comes out and stays in the corner before Hogan comes out. And the match starts with Savage doing a lot of stalling on the floor. And Ventura and Monsoon go back and forth, with Ventura saying that Savage took Elizabeth to the top, and Monsoon comes back, says, yeah, and he also slapped her around in the dressing room.
Yep.
Playing up some domestic violence here for some added heel heat.
Did that actually, like, did they show that?
He did, like, knock her to the floor in that angle.
Oh, wow.
And anyway, so Ventura then says, well, later on in the match, says a punch in the nose might not be the worst thing for Elizabeth. Very different time in 1989, yeah. I guess, of what could be said and not said. Savage gets the heat, cuts Hogan above the left eye, and is bleeding. An Alexander Gustafsson, we'll call it. And beats him down until Hogan fights back to his feet. They fought on the floor as Savage tries to ram him into the barricade, but Hogan blocks. And then Elizabeth stands in front of the post to stop Hogan from sending Savage into the post, and then lets him down. But then Savage sends Hogan into the post. Savage yells at Elizabeth, sends her to the back with Dave Hebner barring her from ringside. And then Savage drops Hogan on the top rope by the throat, chokes him with wrist tape, which Ventura was all in favor of, and then chokes him on the mat. Hits the top rope elbow drop, but Hogan kicks out and starts hulking up, comes back, hits the big boot, leg drop, and pins Savage at 17 minutes and 55 seconds, which was the longest match in WrestleMania history up until this point.
No way.
And Ventura again is just watches the whole posing routine, saying, maybe I have to come out of retirement as the show goes off the air.
Yeah, I really like this match, man. I thought the pace was excellent throughout. It really had the pace of a lot of Randy Savage matches. I thought Hogan did really well, too. And the storytelling, I thought, was really good. I thought Liz performed very well. I think it's rare, and I don't recall many instances in pro wrestling where, like, a love story has worked this well. Usually it's, like, I don't know, it just seems super cheesy, but, like, in this, you can actually buy it, and the crowd just went wild here.
All right. So from there, we will head on over to feedback.
What do you give this show?
You know, this show had a really, really great build to it. I would put it ahead of WrestleMania 4, but not like this is a crazy go-out-of-your-way-to-see show. I still give this one, I'd say, a 4 out of 10.
I thought the main event was really good. Now, I do consider the main event something that people should go out of the way to see if they haven't. So I give this a 6.
Well, there you go. Wei Ting giving this a 6. And Wei, obviously the Rick Martel heel turn was one of the bigger angles shot on this WrestleMania 5 event. So now we were going to go back about a year ago when Martel was on the Law with Dan Lavransky chatting about the heel turn in 1989.
Now, when you went back to the WWF, were you surprised that you ended up back in, like, a tag team situation? Because I thought they would maybe try to capitalize on you being a former champion and kind of have you, you know, maybe feud with Hogan or something.
No, well, the tag team was my idea. You
okay.
know, when I first met Vince, when we had that meeting while I was here in Montreal, International Wrestling, I went
right.
to meet him in New York, and you know, so I went in his office, and him and I had a good relationship from back in '80, because you know, as you know, Vince, you know, was really a workout addict. You know,
yes.
he loved to work out.
Yes.
And back in 79, 80, there wasn't that many guys that used to work out, you know. Wrestlers were built, you know, big guys.
Like
you know,
barrels.
But bodybuilders, there weren't that many bodybuilders,
right.
you know. And Vince and I, we used to talk sometimes at TV about you know, working out and different routines and stuff. So we had a good relationship. So when we met in 85, you know, and... I mean, in 87, early, late 86 that I met him. You know, he told me, he says, Rick, listen, you know, what would you like? And I remember that was his exact word. He says, look, he says, you tell me what you want. He says, just look at it this way, you know, like you have a magic wand and you tell me what you want and I'll make it happen, you know? And at that time, I was I met this guy, Tom Zink.
Right.
And Tom looked like a younger me, you know. And, we kind of looked alike, and you know, we had a similar style. So we met, and I saw him in Winnipeg the first time, and you know, right away I said, well. You know, yeah, sure. This guy kind of some moves that you know he kind of. So I decided to bring him into Montreal International Wrestling, and then we wrestled together a couple of times, and I knew there was big potential between him and I. You know, that we could tag team and eventually make something really big, and it could have been something really really big because you know we had that Can-Am connection.
Yep.
The name was my idea. Because back then, you know, the marketing, the merchandising
yep.
and stuff, you know, we could have done well in Canada and could have done well in the States.
That's
and
right.
You know, the whole thing. And Vince loved the idea. And then when we teamed up, he was in love with our whole thing. And we used to do different moves also. We made sure that we innovated with different moves.
Yeah.
You know, it was back in 87, you know, so... you know, it wasn't really something that guys did. You know, the routines we had was very different. And anyway, so, you know, in the back of my mind, even back then, I knew I wanted to become a heel eventually. And I had it in my mind that later I would turn against Tom and then have this really, really big feud with him and I, and it would have been great, you know, like the two brothers almost in the split and the jealousy, you know, the younger guy, the older, you know, it would have been great.
Yeah, it's classic.
But, you know, Tom, eventually, you know, all of a sudden, I guess it was too much for him, and he just, he went away, he went on with this rumor that said that, you know, was making more money than he was, but it was his way of, getting out of it, because, you know, Vince never did that, you know, I mean, tag teams, he paid the same money, and that was it, and,
what?
Because, you know, you can't start that, if you start doing that, I mean, then, you know, it becomes a complicated
right.
situation.
Sure, absolutely.
So, from your question, Dan, that, sure, you know, I started as a tag team, because it was my idea, and I felt great about that, and like I said, I had a plan of switching heel. And then when Tom walked out on me right there and then, I mean, you know, didn't leave us any opportunities to do something about it. And,
right.
So they decided to replace him with Tito. And then we became Strike Force.
Right.
And again, you know, I always had in the back of my mind, you know, that I wanted to become a heel because when I started in pro wrestling, my brother was a heel, you know.
Okay.
So I used to travel with the heels a lot. And I, it was like a thing, you know, I used to like to hang around with the heels a lot more than the baby faces. You know? I like the heels. I like their attitude and all that. And, you know, the way they were, you know, baby faces tended to be more prima donnas and stuff. And I wasn't comfortable with that, you know. And So eventually, you know, and I'm the one that proposed to Vince about switching heel on Tito. And his first reaction was like, oh, no, Rick, impossible. You know, I mean, you know, nobody could see it, you know.
Well, you know what? Because Rick, you were so good as a babyface. Like, you were such a convincing babyface, which is a really, really, really hard thing to do. And because I remember when you did the switch and you switched to the model, I was blown away at how good you were as a heel, because I'm like, I would have never thought of Rick Martel as a heel.
Yeah, yes, and you're alone, believe me. Almost everybody, you know, didn't agree with that idea, you know. I mean, and in fact, Vince told me no, you know, the first time. He said, no, Eric. And I went back at him, and he said, no, you know, this is, we can't do it. I don't see it, you know, I really don't see it. And I went to the point I was so, you know, because I'd been in wrestling at that time for 15 years as a babyface. And I knew I had it in me, and I wanted to have some, a challenge, you know, and a creative challenge.
Sure,
and I knew and I knew that the heel kind of lead the match.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
And I wanted to do that. I wanted the opportunity of doing that. And so he said no a couple of times, and then finally I said, well, if I don't do it here, I'm going to do it somewhere else. And I gave my notice, and I left.
Wow.
And I had contacted Japan and, you know, contacted the other territories. And I was at home in Florida. And all of a sudden the phone rang. And Vince, I answered the phone and says, Rick, Vince, you know. Oh, Vince, how are you? You know, and finally he says, Rick, listen, all right, I'll tell you what. He says, you know, WWF doesn't need Rick Martel. And Rick Martel doesn't need WWF, all right? So let's go from there. So he says, how about you get on the plane and come and meet, and we'll talk about what you mentioned about switching heel, and
Maybe
we'll find a way, you know. And then I went and met him, and then he says, okay, let's do it this way and this way. And then I did. And I remember, you know, when I did it in Atlantic City, the first guy that, you know, when I walked out the ring, you know, and Hulk right away was there, and because Hulk and I were roommates with the AWA,
right.
You know, I was roommates for a few months with Hulk, and right away, you know, when I came out, I came in the dressing room. Hulk came to say, "Oh, Rick, man, I'm sure it's gonna work, man. I know it. I feel it. You know, it just feels right. You know." And he was the first one to encourage me. And the next day, we're doing television in upstate New York, and I walked out to the ring, and the reaction was fantastic. You know, everybody was booing me. I knew it was going to work. So, and then from there, the gimmick, the model gimmick, you know, was like, because I didn't have a gimmick. You know, I knew I wanted to be a heel, but you know,
what kind? Yeah.
You know, everybody had a gimmick at
that
time.
Right, sure,
but
sure.
I hadn't put much idea, you know, much thought to it, and Vince and J.J. Dillon came up with the idea.
Wow.
You know, about being a model, you know. And I remember when Vince first told me the idea, you know, I said, the model, man, what kind of heat am I going to generate from that? And I remember I called my wife that night. I said, look, you want to put a gimmick on me called, you know, they want to call me the model. You know? And I was kind of disappointed, you know. So my wife said, well, let's put it this way, you know, it could have been worse. They could have asked, you know, you to be a rooster. You know?
That one,
a gimmick, Red Rooster.
Yeah, that one went to Terry Taylor.
Yeah, probably the worst gimmick ever, you know. So I said, well, you have a point there. You're right. And from that moment on, I went into a creative mode and started thinking of all these arrogance and all this stuff, and the catwalks and all that. And I loved it.
I got to tell
really,
you,
I really enjoyed it.
I got to tell you, Rick, you were brilliant as the model. Like, me and my buddies, we were all in high school at that point, and seriously, we just thought you were the best, man. The big, you'd have that big button that said, yes, I'm a model. And, you know, the can of arrogance, obviously, and the sunglasses, and your hair pulled back. And we thought, A, it was a great gimmick, and B, we were blown away because we never thought Rick Martel could pull it off so well, and you were fabulous as the model.
Oh, thank you very much, man. It was really a great time for me, and you know, it's fantastic. And also, what's great is that for my first feud as a model, against Tito, you know, and it was great because Tito was such a professional, you know, and to be wrestling him, you know, having him as a babyface,
right.
You know, oh man, it's great, and I really, really enjoyed that. It really gave me the juice to keep going, you know, and to enjoy still what I was doing.
Yeah. Now, all this stuff like the can of arrogance, and you came up with all that stuff yourself?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. It was all my ideas, you know, and the catwalks and all the different stuff. Because Vince, you know, at that time, there were so many gimmicks, and he didn't have time to, you know, I mean, to do... And there was like 2-3 towns a night.
Sure.
And he had so much on his plate.
Right.
That it was up to the individual wrestler to come up with his ideas or whatever. You know, it was like, hey, look, we're giving you the ball and run with it.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
I remember, I'd call him, you know, I'd say, hey, look, Vince, how about this? You know, how about if I do these catwalks and all that? Oh, yeah, sure. Well, Vince, you know, I have to go and buy different clothes. Oh, well, okay, we'll give you a budget, you know, to go buy what you want, you know. And he'd say yes to everything I said, you know. And it was great because I really had a leeway with him where he gave me the green light on pretty much everything I asked.
And since we heard from Martel, let's also hear now from his counterpart, Tito Santana.
Let's talk a little bit about Rick Martel as well, because it's funny, as I was researching this interview, so much of it goes back to my life when I was younger. My younger sister, she was in love with Strikeforce. She thought you guys were the cutest guys in the world.
Well, that's very nice of your sister. You know, when I ended up teaming up with Rick Martel after he had problems with Tom Zink, we knew we were both good workers, but I never thought we were going to get over as quick as we did. I mean, we got over real big, real fast, and we got a great following. You know, the fans really got behind us, and you know, working with Rick Martel, you know, he's very close to what I'm like. You know,
mm-hmm.
He's a very, very, very dependable person, and very, very great. He had a great knowledge of our business, you know, so we put it all together and we clicked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you certainly did. I thought for that time, really, you were like the quintessential babyface team in the Federation. How did you enjoy tag team compared to like singles wrestling, or did you have a preference?
Well, to me, I always felt that a tag team was easier on the body. Myself, I really enjoyed being a singles wrestler. I figured that Vince McMahon could have done a lot more with Tito Santana by himself as a singles wrestler, because I pretty much, you know, drew money with pretty much everybody that I worked with. You know, but for me to be on the back burner in a tag team situation was not bad, because I was still in the limelight and I was preserving my body a little bit, you know. But you know, I was hoping that someday I would have gotten back as a singles wrestler and gotten another opportunity to be a headliner, but it actually never happened. You know, they ended up making me become a matador, and you know, with really no intentions of really pushing the manager.
Yeah, yeah, no, I saw that as it unfolded, and I do want to talk about the El Matador gimmick because you know, it to me when I remember when the character finally came out, and I, you know, I've been watching Tito Santana wrestle for 10 years now, and now he's El Matador, and to me as a fan, I was almost insulted because I thought, why does Tito need to have this type of gimmick? You know, it was the same as when Dusty Rhodes came in and Vince made him wear polka dots. I thought he was almost insulting you guys with some of these gimmicks.
Yeah, I felt that same way because I didn't think I needed a gimmick. You know, I thought that Tito Santana was over big enough. All they had to do was create some kind of soap opera with somebody, and, you know, I could have been up and running with, you know, with individual matches. But, you know, Vince McMahon was the boss, and if he was going to create something, and because he really spent a lot of money to create El Matador, I figured he was going to push it, you know. But I guess he had so much money to throw away that, it was just like a game to him. You know, so I thought I was really going to get a big push. And I think, I talk about it in the book, I think at the time, they were thinking about going into South America, and you mm-hmm. know, maybe they were thinking about giving me a push, and then they changed their mind and they ended up going in north, you know, to Canada, and that's why I believe that I was told that's why they went with Bret Hart instead of me.
Really? Yeah, because you tell that story in the book where Pat Patterson came up to you and said, you know, Vince was going to pick either you or Bret. So you think that's what it was, because he wanted to go into Canada rather than South America?
I think so. I think when they started doing the Matador thing with me, when I went to Tijuana to learn how to become a Matador, they had a lot of difficulties with the government, you know, either bringing in cameras or everybody wanted to pay off, you know, everybody had their hand out, and I just think that he wanted to avoid you know, having to get involved with all that. I personally think that's the reason. I could be totally wrong. You know, they don't discuss too many things with you.
Sure.
So there you go. A bit of a further explanation on the turn at the time that we saw executed at WrestleMania 5. So now we'll head on over to the feedback and see what you guys had to say about it. So why don't you start us off, Wei? Okay.
You know what? I'll start us off.
Okay.
How about that? Andrew Sheehy. Oh, God. Andrew Sheehy says, I remember renting this event from a local video as an 11-year-old in the summer of 2001. The opening match between Hercules and King Haku was very sloppy at best, with the future member of Power and Glory going over. The Rockers Twin Towers match was fine, but it's remembered for the WrestleMania debut of the man who would become Mr. WrestleMania, Shawn Michaels. The Rougeos Bushwhackers match was a horror-awful train wreck that sent the business back 40 years. Why the hell did the Rougeos get booked with these comedy schmucks instead of the Hart Foundation? Piper's Pit was so weird, with Roddy Piper closing the segment by dousing Morton Downey Jr. with a fire extinguisher. Why the WWF, a company that was producing anti-tobacco ads on its Coliseum video releases at the time, would allow someone to smoke on the biggest show of the... Well, because they were making fun of him. Your turn.
Okay. We'll from there go on over as I get this up here. My apologies. I'm trying to multitask now. We go to Chris Wolt. A WrestleMania that I remember renting on VHS back during my childhood, but have just given it another viewing. It seems the WWF hadn't picked up on the production issues of the previous year. Sound all over the place, interviews with entrance music piped over, etc. Another formula of the time seemed to be quantity over quality. 14 matches, most of which are poor or just instantly forgettable. The WWF style didn't help. The crowd seemed genuinely interested in more athletic guys like The Rockers, Blue Blazer, Mr. Perfect, and the Hart Foundation. Everything else on the main undercard was dull and got the appropriate reaction. The Piper's Pit section killed the crowd, really took my enthusiasm for watching the rest of the show away. The Jake-Andre match was sad to watch. Andre's decline through early WrestleMania shows is evident to see. The guy shouldn't have needed to work anymore. Watching again, Gorilla and Jesse sowed the seeds throughout the Strikeforce match that something was going to happen. Enjoyed Rude and Warrior, mainly for the finish. Heenan holding the feet is a great visual. The main event was excellent. Macho McMahon dragged a match out of Hogan that in terms of drama was probably better than the Steamboat match at WrestleMania 3. The build and match told a story, something they could learn from, created emotional involvement, and the fans will want to see it. Ventura and Gorilla were also superb throughout. The main quality of this era was that these two in the commentary booth. Was there a celebrity no-show on the day, or was Rock and Robin meant to murder America the Beautiful? 4 hidden extinguishers out of 10.
Chris in Ottawa, hey fellas, what a difference a year makes. After the clusterfuck that was WrestleMania 4, WrestleMania 5 was the greatest do-over in WWF history. Several matches on the card had a clear personal issue for the combatants to settle in the ring, with no tournaments or battle royals seemingly thrown together at the last minute. Almost everything was better than the last time, except for the entrance aisle at Trump Plaza. Bret Hart, the Bushwhackers, and Mr. Perfect all nearly tripped and fell while heading to the ring. I can't imagine what it would have been, what it could have done to a career if somebody was to trip while making their entrance at the biggest show. It seemed so insane that they couldn't have smoothed out the entrance that I ended up watching this several times, and I noticed none other than Rene Goulet with the headset on, warning each and every performer during their entrance that there's a sudden drop in the aisle right where he's standing by frantically waving his arms at them and pointing at the ground by his feet. Insanity! Apart from that, and the Bushwhacker hand job on poor unsuspecting Raymond Rougeau during a body slam, this event was a marked improvement over the previous year's debacle. I give the show a solid 7 Trumps out of 10.
Next up, I remember getting this pay-per-view the day after on VHS from a friend of the family. On the live pay-per-view, Haku was introduced as King Tonga, and by the time we bought the Coliseum video version, it had been changed. This show and WrestleMania 4 are my all-time favorite shows. Savage vs. Hogan had so many little things along the way, from Survivor Series to the Rumble, even a few Saturday night's main events, all leading to the big heel turn on the Friday night main event show. First show I ever saw was the main event when Hogan lost to Andre. At 11 years old, I figured Savage would win the tournament, and Hogan would beat him at Mania the next year. Only flat thing was the Warrior match. Didn't like their rematch at SummerSlam either. This is days of lairs being added, which hooked so many of us. We went from Hogan and Savage versus DiBiase and Andre to Hogan and Beefcake versus Macho and Zeus. A fully planned out and executed storyline that never seemed to drag on forever like so many Triple H and Cena feuds. To this day, I tell everyone I do love wrestling, but I haven't been watching all these years, hoping I feel like I did from 88 to 92. After SummerSlam 92, it did not have the magic it once did. Piper segment hasn't aged well. Also, love where Hogan got jumped by Savage and Sherry, which aired on Primetime Wrestling the night after.
Quixote from Vancouver. I really enjoyed this for the most part. Great memories, great gimmicks, and some great matches. But there was a lot of people here that didn't need the WrestleMania payout. Bravo, Andre, Rooster, Duggan, Robin's horrible singing. So many events that just didn't satisfy. But the ultimate time waster was the Piper's Pit. As a fellow kilt wearer, I love Piper. But the yell of, "This is stupid," from the crowd summed it all up. The main event was great, and I always enjoy the Warrior, no matter what he does. The Twin Towers match was a pleasant surprise, and the Bushwhackers are just silly fun. The small things really made this. Quick entrances and exits, the closeness of the crowd, and the short promos, they let the action tell the story. But what ultimately made this card for me was Monsoon and Ventura. They were awesome, and I really wish we had that dynamic today.
Christian Small, when I heard you guys were going to review this show, I went over to Wikipedia to see what to expect. I saw that there were 14 matches and that the Observer awarded this worst show of the year, so I just had to watch. Honestly, I regret that choice a little, as this show felt like it would never end. In fact, I skipped the Piper's Pit, Bobby and Rooster, and the main event, because I've watched it multiple times before. There's a few things I didn't get from this show. They repeated the Jesse Ventura posing spot from WrestleMania 4. Was it done just to kill time? I can say the same for the WrestleMania rap. I wouldn't blame Vince if he didn't pay Run DMC, as that was horrible. I understood WrestleMania and Pile Driver out of the entire thing, but on a positive side of things, I was surprised by it, as I didn't think rap existed in 1989. Oh, and what happened to Ted DiBiase? Last year, he's potentially going to win the WWF title, and now he's working Brutus Beefcake, one of the worst people ever to come into wrestling. He gives us a 4 out of 10.
We go to El Dandy, who says, "Before I share my random thoughts for WrestleMania 4, I would like to make a song request to close out this week's edition of Review Away."
We're listening to George Michael.
He was going to recommend Rockin' Robin sing America the Beautiful.
Well, maybe we started the show with that.
Oh, okay.
You ever think of that?
This card was clearly built around the Mega Powers Explode storyline. Everything else on the show is just filler. What really made this WrestleMania special was the beautiful performance of America the Beautiful by Rockin' Robin. How do you go from Aretha Franklin and Gladys Knight to Rockin' Robin? Was Vince McMahon hurting for cash and was unable to hire a real singer? To quote Jesse, she should keep her day job. The Piper's Pit segment was bizarre. It was painfully long and cringeworthy and seemed like the world's longest anti-smoking PSA.
Let's go to Ian from Ely in the UK. I love that you're reviewing WrestleMania 5. It was my first wrestling experience. I remember seeing the VHS cover at my local video store with Hogan and Savage with the explosion and thinking that this looked like something I needed to see. It's only fitting that WrestleMania 5 is also my first time contributing to the feedback. Key negatives on the show: Rock and Robin's America the Beautiful. If you don't have a place on the card for your women's champion, then don't put her in here. I don't actually have any issues with Snuka being introduced back to the general public here, but the timing was completely odd. Would it not have been better served as a run-in or a backstage vignette or promo of some sort? I know that would require Snuka to talk, but this was just bizarre. Piper's Pit was just terrible. It took 7 minutes for Piper to show up for his own segment. The payoff was a fire extinguisher shot on perhaps the least likable man in existence. I love Piper, but even he couldn't turn this steaming pile of dog shit into ice cream. Sherry Martel gives an awful promo, but tell me she's not worlds better than anything Gail Kim is doing today. Haku and Hercules, a decent opener. Neither man was really going to go bananas with their work rate, but the story was around Hercules freeing himself. And he goes on, the main event truly was the main event. It felt like it was worthy of the whole promotion's attention. These days, by continuing to try and promote that, each card has 2, 3, or even 4 main events. WWE are losing out on the spotlight that can be attested to any one single match. This was the culmination of the greatest angle in the history of pro wrestling and was played to perfection by the two men in the match. 6 hairy knuckled hand jobs out of 10.
What?
I think that's a Bushwhacker reference.
Okay. Kid Canada, more childhood memories this week with WrestleMania 5. Being a long show, I will only focus on the main event. I remember the build to this so vividly as a little 8-year-old. I even still have the WWF magazine from earlier that year with Demolition on the cover, but a feature article on where Miss Elizabeth's loyalties truly lied. The backstage segment from main event with Savage accusing Hogan of having jealous eyes was so perfect, as was the overall storyline. Savage felt that Hogan was not only trying to steal his woman, but was trying to steal his spotlight, and Hogan was a babyface who was going to reclaim the throne and overcome the jealous Macho Man. The match itself was pretty solid work-wise, but the crowd was fantastic for it after being pretty quiet for everything else. A much better show than Mania 4, and a 7 out of 10 show overall.
All right, from there we go on over to Rich from Idaho. This is my all-time favorite WrestleMania. Tons of action. Those that may complain about the large undercard need to remember this was a time when the WWE, WWF did not have to fill up nearly as much TV time as they do now, and most of that was filled with squash matches. Thus, at the time, literally any of these matches could have been a main event on any of the TV products at the time, thus making it more special. I'm a huge old-school tag team wrestling fan and love seeing all the tag matches. 10 out of 10.
We go to DG Mitchell, who says, I was surprised to see Warrior and Rude go as long as it did. I'll take it Warrior's bear hug put a good 5 minutes onto their match. I'm not going to bash on Warrior's skills as I was a fan, but I know he wasn't great but was good at what he did, apart from nearly dropping Rude on his head. Rick Rude made the Warrior look amazing. He was another truly underutilized star and was surprised to like... Okay.
Are you tapping?
Yep.
All right. And we'll end off with Sean. This has always been a favorite of mine. I actually really liked when the shows were at Trump Towers, although the crowds weren't necessarily that good. I liked that there were a lot of matches on this show and that nothing went too long. The Rockers Twin Towers was a great match with the Towers dominating the Rockers. We got the awesome heel turn and even better interview from Rick Martel when he turned on Tito. Demolition gets the better of Fuji and Rick Rude beating the Ultimate Warrior in a really good match. This capped off a year-long program between Hogan and Macho Man. Macho was the heel in this, but if you look at the whole build-up, I'd argue that Hogan was the heel. At Survivor Series, when Hogan won the match, he picks up Elizabeth and does his posing, all while not checking on Macho Man, who was still down in the corner. I found Hogan to come off really unlikable when looking back at this feud, and it feels like it was the wrong guy that turned. Besides that point, the main event was a good match, and this Mania to me will hold a special spot to me, and it's one of the better WrestleManias. So there you go. Thank you, everyone, for all of your feedback to this marathon show. 14 matches, Way.
Yeah, I mean, counting last week's, we've done 30 matches.
Jesus Christ. Shows. Is that how many we have reviewed? Yeah. Holy Christ. 30 matches in 2 weeks.
Which is probably how many matches we'll see in person in New Jersey.
We very well could, Way. We're going to be taking off on Friday to New Jersey, where we will be there all weekend long. And I thought we'd quickly just go over where we're going to be, just in case there's some listeners that we might get to meet. Because last year we got to meet quite a few, so hopefully we run into some of you. The concrete plans for right now is that Friday night we are going to be at Ring of Honor for the Supercard of Honor. That's happening at the Hammerstein Ballroom. And then later that night, Kaiju Big Battle.
Yes.
Which is also an iPay-per-view, I figured out.
Really?
Yeah, okay. That's going to be there, part of WrestleCon. Saturday morning, I believe we're going to be going to Access that day. Most likely the afternoon session, unless that changes. Definitely follow us on Twitter, at Law Radio or at Way0937. And I'll keep track of where we're going.
Yeah.
So Twitter is the best way to keep up to date. Because me and Way, we change plans like WWE Creative at times. Mm-hmm. Maybe we're just going to change everything. No. But we'll definitely be at those. Saturday night Hall of Fame. Sunday is pretty much all WrestleMania, unless we can squeeze anything in the morning. But that is the plan, Way. So it's going to be the rest of the week. We'll be back. We are going to do Review and Impact, which should be up Thursday night, and then hopefully doing a couple of shows from down in New York and New Jersey. So has Trisha asked you to induct her yet? Is it official? Can you break any news?
Oh, I can't reveal that.
Did you sign a confidentiality agreement?
Well, I can't reveal anything.
Oh, Jesus.
We'll find out.
If Way starts dropping like WWE Universe or Superstars terms, then I think we should all be a little concerned that he's hiding something.
Hmm.
So tune in. I guess you can't tune into the Hall of Fame. You just got to – maybe I'll live tweet. Oh, the contest.
What contest?
The contest that I mentioned on Monday night.
Oh,
do
right.
Go up this week and pick how long you feel Bruno Sammartino's speech is going to
okay.
be. That's the contest
well,
this week.
What does the winner get?
The winner is going to win
– there's no prize?
Oh, no, you'll win something.
Like what?
I don't know. I haven't figured it out yet. Something good.
Okay.
Didn't I say it on Monday night? I thought I did.
Yeah, you did, yeah.
Okay. So that thread will be up on the message board this week. Lots of stuff on the site, guys, to go check out. If you missed it, The Law Sunday Night featuring Bruno, Trish Stratus, Gabe Sapolsky on Law Extra. For those of you that download, that is up. As well, we've got interviews up on the site with Chuck Taylor of Dragon Gate USA, also doing the Evolve show Friday and Chikara Saturday. That is up. Machine Gun Carl Anderson, that is also up on the site. We've got Review of Raw from Monday going over Monday's go-home show from Washington. Very interesting show. And still to come, what day is today? Wednesday. Tomorrow, Thursday, we'll be joined by Alex Greenfield for a WrestleMania preview as well. And a video preview with the Law Crew, with Dan Lavransky, Jason Agnew, and myself for Fight Network. That'll also be going up. Tons of stuff.
Yeah.
Why would you ever have any need for anything else? Besides what we give you.
Yeah, you don't, I mean, children, family.
No, give them all up for this week. Tell them I'll see you guys on Tuesday shelter. When the weekend's over.
Yeah, you don't need.
So lots of stuff up on the website. Go on over liveaudiowrestling.com, Live Audio Wrestling on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter for all of the up-to-date moving and whatever we're doing in New Jersey.
People know where to find us. I don't think we need to.
Okay, Way's just dead right now.
On hey, come on, 30 matches, you know.
Way's exhausted. All right, we're going to get on out of here. Next week, can I make a selection? Because
yes.
I want to make a short one.
All right.
Okay. We were privy to Morton Downey Jr. on this show.
Yeah.
He did an infamous – when he did his talk show, there was one time he did a wrestling-themed show, and it's a disaster.
Nice.
So I thought we could review that. I believe it's a 45-minute show.
Perfect.
Featuring the likes of Paul Heyman calling in.
Really?
This is like in the – I think it's early 90s. So we're going to review the Morton Downey Jr. show because, to be honest, by the time me and Wade do this review, we are going to be so sick of wrestling. I can't sit down and watch more matches at
yeah.
this point. So we might be on a little bit of a documentary run after WrestleMania weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Need to change it up a little.
That's fun.
By the way, yeah. Netflix in Canada now has a bunch of wrestling titles they've added.
Cool.
So there you go. In case
cool.
you don't get enough, Netflix
yeah.
Canada.
Thanks.
All right. I can hear George Michael right now as he takes us out. We will chat with you for Review and Impact and whatever else is popping up. on the website. We'll chat with you later.